using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 12th of October, year of our Lord, 2021, day 575 of America held hostage of the New World Order. Well, the rebellion is building. Not only have we had airline pilots, especially at Southwest, but there's other airline pilots, as I pointed out yesterday. It's very important because the tip of tyranny has been, since 9/11, has been running through air travel. And now, as they're rebelling, we have Texas Governor Greg Abbott belatedly, but at least finally, joining the rebellion as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Yes, last night it broke that Greg Abbott is now banning private employers from firing people because of a vaccine mandate. That doesn't exist, as I pointed out yesterday. It is a fraud. It is a bluff. There is no such regulation. Not the Department of Labor, not at OSHA, not in the Federal Register from them. There is no executive order from Trump regarding that. Now, Biden did put in an executive order to force the military, to force federal employees, to force federal contractors. He put those executive orders in, and they are in the Federal Register, and I showed you the documents yesterday. But there is nothing at all about the bluff, the mandate to force private companies who have more than 100 employees to force vaccinate their people or fire them under threat of fines. That is not there. Now, it gets even more interesting because, you know, we had at the very beginning of this, we had Ron DeSantis in Florida say, as Biden came out at the beginning of September and said, well, you're going to get mandated or you're going to get fines. DeSantis said, if you force people to get mandated, I'm going to fine you. So what do you do with that? I talked about that in light of the lesser magistrate and about competing authorities and the fact that we have to determine, based on what the supreme authority is, secularly in this country, is the Constitution. These people all swear obedience to the Constitution as a condition of their office, whether they're state office holders or federal office holders. They swear allegiance to the Constitution. And so when we have competing authorities like that, it doesn't work for a pastor or a lawyer or whatever. Just say, well, just obey the government. Whatever the government tells you to do, you do that, right? Well, you can't. You live in Florida. You're fined if you do, and you're fined if you don't. And so you can't possibly be fined with that kind of a situation. We have to think, actually. We can't just be passive anymore. When we see our society being rapidly changed for the worse, we better get involved. I read you reports over and over again of people, pastors, nurses, the Lithuanian guy yesterday says, yeah, I've never taken an interest in politics. And I've said all the time, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you. And right now, they've got you under a microscope. That's what all this surveillance and control stuff is about. And not only that, but they're plotting your harm. Do you not understand that yet? I think if you listen to this program, you do. But let's take a look at what Greg Abbott did. And I tweeted it out last night. I said, well, it's better late than never. I'm glad that he is now protecting people from being fired by private employers. Finally, you know, in Florida, they did that right away. And I criticized Abbott for not doing that. He only put limitations on people who did business with the state. And even there, he has a conflict already set up with Biden even though Biden doesn't have the law out there. He hasn't put the mandate out there. But there's an implied conflict when he says, well, you can't mandate this for state business and so forth. So he could have done this sooner because, you know, we had hundreds of people lose their jobs at just one Houston hospital. But finally, he's doing it. And I'll just say this. You know, I've criticized his jumping in with $300 million to do contact tracing on day one when he got the money released by President Trump with the executive order that Trump signed on that Friday the 13th. The first thing Abbott did was to kick in $300 million to an obscure country, a company that nobody had heard of, in a little shell office in Frisco, Texas. And both Republicans and Democrats in the press, everybody's like, who are these people? How are they getting that much money? That's more money than he said he was going to commit to protecting the border. You remember? The border, I think, was $250 million, but he gave out very quickly, no questions asked, $300 million to somebody. So I've had a problem with where he's been on this all along, but if he's going to, as long as he's going to do the right thing, I don't trust him. You shouldn't trust any of these politicians. Trust no one who approaches the precious jewel of liberty, not even if they have an R behind their name. So, you know, if they got a D behind their name, they're basically flying their flag that they're coming after you. With an R, you watch them carefully, especially when they get behind you so they don't stab you in the back. But he's doing the right thing. And just like I said about some of the cops in Australia, some of the people, when I said, hey, look at this, these cops are talking about this, some of them have quit their jobs. We got another one who's done that as well, saying this is wrong. This is not what the police are for. We need to stop this. And when they do the right thing, you know, a lot of people, when I talked about that, I congratulate them for doing that. A lot of people said, well, you know, they were out there, you know, kicking heads in until it came for them or something like that. Well, look, we welcome anybody who is going to be on our side on this issue as long as they're on this issue. So I welcome Abbott finally doing something to protect freedom and the Constitution. Another executive order cracking down on vaccine mandates, this time banning any entity in Texas, including private businesses, from requiring vaccinations for employees or customers. Finally, he did it. You know, it would not ban them requiring vaccines for customers. And now he's doing it for customers and employees. The COVID vaccine, he said, is safe, effective, and our best defense against the virus. You see what I mean about not trusting people? He's sitting on the fence. He's got one foot on the side of truth, and the other one he's got in the big pharma side. These people just cannot get with the program. But we take what we can from them, and we praise them for doing the right thing. So he's finally done the right thing with this. And it's kind of interesting the way that this plays into this whole Southwest thing, because Southwest has taken the most resistance. The pilots at Southwest have stood up the most, other than any other airline. Biden is bragging that he got a memo from the CEO at United saying, yeah, we were only 59% until I mandated it. Now we've got to 99%. Ain't that great? We love mandates. We can force people to do what we want or take their jobs. Well, good for you. Who wants to work for a company like United anyway? If I was ever going to fly again, which I seriously doubt I ever will, they would not be on my list of companies that I would even entertain going to after they do something like that to their employees. But at Southwest, the employees, it's not the management of Southwest, the employees and the pilots have hung together. And so I think this is very interesting when you look at these two things together. This might have been one of the things that helped to get a little bit of resolve on Abbott, because Southwest, I believe, is still headquartered in Texas. I mean, they were always in Texas. Going back to 1980, when I was at Texas Instruments in Houston, headquartered in Dallas, we would take Southwest flights all the time. It was almost like a bus ride, you know. It'd take less than an hour to go from Houston to Dallas. And the plane was just filled with people from Texas Instruments going back and forth for business meetings. You didn't have Zoom. You didn't have anything like that. So you had to go in person to meet with people who were working on something, and it was constant. And so I think they're still headquartered in Texas. They've gotten much, much bigger. At that point in time, they were just a small regional carrier. And I think TI negotiated some special deals with them. But as they're putting this out, and Southwest, as I pointed out yesterday, was talking about the weather. Nobody was buying it. I saw the best comment I saw on that was, weather is the new Let's Go Brandon. Again, if you don't know that meme. That was Brandon, I forget his last name, NASCAR driver at Talladega. And as he won, they were doing an on-air interview with him, and the crowd behind him started yelling, F Joe Biden, F Joe Biden, F Joe Biden, and a big chant. Very clear what was going on TV, and the reporter says, oh, I can hear them in the back saying, let's go, Brandon. So that has now become a euphemism, a polite euphemism, for F Joe Biden. And weather has now become a polite euphemism for people who are going on strike, who are doing sick outs. And they say, well, this is not a sick out. Well, actually, it is. They're even saying it. You know, these pilots realize that they're going to get fired in a couple of weeks. So it's like, well, I'm taking my sick days before that happens. So you had a lot of people calling in sick and taking sick days. You got the pilots union suing them. And this is one pilot speaking out about being fired for the vaccine mandates.
I've been an airline pilot for 18 years, and now I'm facing an ultimatum. Not a choice, but an ultimatum. I'm being told in order to continue my career as an airline pilot, I must be vaccinated, which really means I have to choose between putting food on the table for my family and my freedom of choice. Whether you believe in vaccination is the right thing to do or not, the situation goes far beyond health. We, the American people, have fought for freedom for 257 years. We go around the world spreading ideas of freedom and democracy. We help other countries and people fight for their freedoms, while ours are being stripped away. You may think being forced to wear a mask or get a vaccination is insignificant, but when you begin to compile mandate after mandate and loss of freedom after freedom, it becomes very significant. As each thing is taken away, we face what is known as the shifting baseline syndrome. This syndrome changes our idea of a new and acceptable normal. Soon, we will not remember what it was like to have the freedoms we once did. Our children and our grandchildren will experience less freedom, and they won't have the privilege or the pleasure to enjoy the same choices our parents had or that we have. If we give into these mandates and we do not stand up for our freedom of choice, we dishonor every armed service person over the last 257 years. A disservice to the people who have fought and bled for the very freedoms we enjoy. Whether you believe in vaccination or not, I'm standing up for your freedom of choice. You may support the vaccine mandates because they fall in line with your current beliefs. But if we let this happen now, there will be a day when what you're told to do will not fall in line with your beliefs. If we do not stand together and fight back in one voice, soon we could be told where to live, what job we will do, what religion to believe, and how many children we can have. Do you really want someone telling your children or your grandchildren what, when, and how they will live every minute of their lives? It's time we take a stance. It's time we fight for our freedom of choice while we still can. Join us.
That's right. Everybody needs to stand together on this. This is not one airline, and this is not one industry. This is everybody. And there are people who are wise enough, not too many people. Most people are like, oh, I like the vaccine or I don't like the vaccine. It's based on that. But there are some people who like the vaccine, who believe the propaganda, and yet they're understanding how dangerous this precedent is that's being set. And I like what Doug Wilson had to say. He said, you know, when one good thing about an earthquake is it shows you where the fault lines are. And we've seen where the fault lines are now, haven't we? We've seen who's on which side of the big crack that opened up. I would also say that we're at a time of great shaking. And the only thing that's going to remain is something's on a firm foundation. That's why I think that the basis for us recovering our society is going to be on the foundation of Christ. That was the foundation that built this country, understanding of Christian liberty and of the rights of the individual, of the dignity of the individual. Those are Christian ideas, and if we don't recover those, just from a practical standpoint as a society, we are done. Pilots are at a unique risk because adverse reactions to a vaccine could affect their ability to pass periodic medical exams required to maintain their license. You know, if somebody gets myocarditis as a pilot, have a heart attack or something like that, I don't know what they do with that. How does that impact them being able to fly? I had a friend who went in the military, went to West Point. He was he wanted to fly helicopters, and he was within about a week of finishing. And he went in with this case of indigestion that just wouldn't go away. He said, can you give me some Maalox? And the doctor looks at him and goes, oh, you've got an ulcer. You're grounded. You won't ever fly again. Whoa. And he was bemoaning. He said, if I had waited a week after I'd finished the class, got the wings or whatever they give him in that, he said, then they would have treated the ulcer, a minor ulcer, and that would have been it. But I don't know what happens when you got myocarditis. I had Dr. Lee Merritt on, and she talked about that. She said, they want to tell you this is a mild thing, and it goes away, but it doesn't go away. When you have heart damage, it's there. It's there. It doesn't repair itself. And that's especially alarming with young people at the beginning of their life. And we've got some amazingly horrible news about some kids and what happened to them with this vaccine, young children, coming up. But I don't want to get into that just yet. Southwest Corporate Operating Officer, the COO, COO. It's not CEO. He's the COO. And he says, we need more staffing cushions for disruption. For disruptions. Do you remember, are we having disruptions? Are we having an iterative process?
You have to prove that this works. And then you've
got to go through over again.
All
this is the problem.
Clinical trials, phase ones, phase twos, phase three, and then show that this particular product is going to be good over a period of years. That alone, if it works perfectly, is going to take a decade.
Why don't we blow the system up?
Yeah,
I mean, obviously we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet.
And it's going to be very difficult to change that unless you do it from within and say...
From the inside.
I don't care what your perception is. We're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and in an iterative way because you do need both.
But it is not to...
Yeah, and then he goes into how we can transmit the mRNA code around and get people vaccinated right away. No, you hear what he says. We're going to do it from the inside. We're not going to care what you think. Your informed consent's out the window. We're going to get rid of this system that actually looks at safety of vaccines and takes 10 years to do it. And we're going to do it disruptively and iteratively. And so you got the Southwest COO saying, we need more staffing cushion for these disruptions. And, you know, to their shame, you had, I mentioned this before, Executive Order 83 from the governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, also the governor of Georgia, doing the same thing. Both of them put out an executive order about 6 weeks to 2 months before Biden put out his press release. It's not an executive order. It's not a federal regulation or anything. But he put out his press release saying we're going to mandate the vaccine. So start firing people out of the hospitals because we've got a deadly pandemic on the way. So shut the hospitals down. The beginning of this, the flatten the curve was all about protecting hospitals. Now they're shutting the hospitals down. And so these Republican governors knew this. They put out these orders saying we're going to bring in National Guard to take the place of the nurses and staff that we're going to fire in about a month or so. They're all in on the plan. Come on. They're all in on it. On Monday, Southwest was once again at the top of the cancellation list, listing 356 cancellations as of last night. Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, says, as a loyal Southwest customer who's been flying safely throughout the pandemic and is utterly opposed to vaccine mandates, I'm asking, stop the madness before more damage is done. Exactly. You know, we had President Trump over the weekend, Saturday, in Iowa. He was faulting Biden for not getting it done. I provide him the vaccines. Why can't he get people to take them? Well, he's doing all he can, President Trump. I'm sure you could have done better with your mandates, right? Corporate coercion was always the plan. Anyway, Rand Paul, I'm sorry. It was Ron Paul who said this is a rebellion. And it truly is. And we have to have that kind of rebellion. This is peaceful civil disobedience. This is a strike to harm the corporations that are doing this. There needs to be a boycotting of this. And by the way, you know, people who are stuck in various places that are served by Southwest, you can't get a rental car either. It's absolutely insane. That's what people are saying. The incredible cruelty and folly of forced vaccines finally came home to roost, writes Zero Hedge. The vaccine mandate backlash has been bubbling just under the surface, but now it has spilled out into the open, threatening to completely derail an already crumbling economy. Well, folks, it's now or never. We're not going to have an economy if we let these people go through with their Great Reset program. Their Great Reset program is to make sure we don't have a job. Andrew Yang and these other progressives want to be on board fully with the technocracy and pushing universal basic income. What's that about? That's about saying you don't have a job, but we're going to pacify you here with a little bit of welfare. It's universal welfare. And they take your jobs away, blaming it on a pandemic. And you can see how phony this is now, can't you? I mean, come on. Who can't see how phony this is at this point in time? According to media reports, scores of pilots and other Southwest employees have coordinated the taking of sick days to use them up in advance of a Southwest Airlines mandate to get the jab or to lose a job. Well, some of them might actually be sick if they took the jab. Did you ever think about that? Southwest Airlines Pilot Association is suing the airline over the imposed vaccine mandate. And again, I'll say it again, we need to get this out. Nobody's really talking about this much. I said last week, was the first time I saw it was John Rappaport. There was another article talking a little bit about the fact that that these OSHA orders have not held up in court very well. And especially the fact that there are three, when you have the bureaucracy, the regulatory bureaucracy starting to write our rules, our regulations without representation. They have three different things that they have to go through. You have to kind of justify it on an emergency. That's going to be hard enough, really. But there's a lot of lies that are out there still being told by politicians and the press. But the key thing was the third one. And the third one was to say that you've considered the impact on the economy. Nobody's talking about what this impact on the economy is going to be. You know, the jobs report that we had that just came out that tanked, that was possibly in anticipation of this, but it did not reflect any of the mass firings of people everywhere. Nurses, doctors, firemen, police officers, military. And this is just mass carnage. This is pushing for a Great Depression. And these are the people who were the frontline people. They were the essential jobs that they didn't pull them back. They worked their job all last year. And now they say they can't. But when that starts to kick in, you're really going to see this thing drop down. But I think since he made that announcement the first week of September, some people have already been fired, not too many. But there's a lot of anticipation if they've got a job that they want to fill. Would you take a job knowing that they're not going to keep you, right? You're not going to be able to keep that job because they're going to mandate a vaccine for you. They're going to, if you want to work in a restaurant or you want to work on the front line of retail or whatever, you're going to have to wear a mask all the time you're at work. Who wants to do that? And then you know that this jab is staring you in the face. And not only that, it's not going to be one, it's not going to be two, it's not even going to be three. They're going to mandate all of the boosters. I don't think they're even going to be annual. They're talking 6 months now. You keep hearing this again. Well, it only lasts for 6 months. They're going to have twice a year. These people have unmitigated, a greed that cannot be satisfied. It's insatiable. It's always just a little bit more. It's like David Rockefeller when he was asked by the newsman. He said, "How much? You're the richest man in the world. How much is enough?" Because he's still working to collect more. And he says, just a little bit more. Well, that's the way it is with big pharmaceutical companies. So, the love of money is the root of all big pharma, isn't it? Southwest Airline Pilots Association is suing them over this bluff, over this executive order, for which there is no executive order, for which there is no OSHA or Department of Labor rule. And there's nothing in the Federal Registry about these private companies. And now the governor of Texas, where I believe still Southwest Airlines is still headquartered, has jumped in and said, you're not going to fire anybody at a private company. This is a full-on rebellion. And you know that it's really picked up speed when the establishment Republicans jump in behind it. Yeah, I'm with those guys. Those guys with the pitchforks and torches. I'm with them. Well, other pilots, such as American Airlines, follow suit. Rumors are circulating that this is only the beginning. Because, folks, if we don't stop this now, we're done. The next thing, as I pointed out, first they said, well, we're going to mandate it for the people who are on the planes. Now we're going to mandate it not just for the crew, but for everybody that works for us anywhere, right? Airlines. And then the next thing is to mandate it for any flight. So you're not going to fly anywhere unless you're vaccinated. That's the plan. We know that's the plan. We're seeing it everywhere. Everything is being shut down to people who aren't double vaxxed or triple vaxxed or whatever the number of the week is. You know that's the plan. If we don't stop this now, I mean, these guys are on the front line. Wish there was something we could do to encourage them. The stupidity of adopting a policy of firing healthcare workers while at the same time claiming that there is a raging pandemic gripping the country has not been lost on Americans. That's right. And again, remember, as the epidemiologist from, I think it was Sweden, where they didn't shut stuff down, he said, you know, we got the curve, right? The curve, you hear the curve everywhere, the curve. Well, what is the curve? It goes back to 1840. It doesn't matter whether it's smallpox or typhoid or whatever it is. That all always goes through a curve, right? Bell-shaped curve. And the Swedish epidemiologist said, why would you want to flatten that and extend the misery? Well, their answer was, we have to protect the national health system in the UK. We have to protect the hospitals here in America. And, you know, when I look at this, and remember, I've talked to the lady who wrote Pandemic Nurse. She was a nurse in Florida, and she said, I was there on the front lines. I really wanted to help people. I heard everything about this pandemic. I wanted to do everything I could. And she said there just weren't any patients there in Florida. So I was hearing that it was really bad in New York. So she ran to the, you know, like you hear people talking about heroes, you know. When there's a fire or disaster, the heroes run to it, right? Well, she ran to it. And she goes up there, and I'm here to help. 3 or 4 days, they didn't call her. Finally, they call her in. And she didn't see anything happening there, except that a lot of people are being murdered with these ventilators. And I reported that the doctors who are pulmonologists said when they saw that, they said, why would you do that to anybody with a respirator? That's never been part of the protocol to put people on a ventilator. Remember? Remember when Trump was berating the CEO of GM because she wasn't manufacturing enough of these ventilators? Ventilators, we've got to have ventilators. We've got to have all of them now. Why? Did anybody ever ask why? Did anybody ever ask a pulmonologist why? Oh, it's all about science and medicine. It's not about any of that. It's not about any of that. This is a dog and pony show of virtue signaling. And so she went up there. She didn't see it. And she wrote a book about it. But you know, you got people like Franklin Graham, who, to his credit, decided that he would take his organization, Samaritan's Purse, and they would set up a field hospital there to help with the crowded hospitals. Nobody showed up, just like nobody showed up at Trump's 2,500-bed hospital that he set up there with the Army. You saw all the pictures of all the empty beds, but you never saw anybody in them. And then they quietly just moved it away. Franklin Graham just quietly moved it away. The hospital ship in New York just quietly moved away, not being used. Same thing with the one in L.A., hospital ship there quietly moved away. Now, why is it that Franklin Graham is cheering the vaccine? Why is it that President Trump is cheering the vaccine when they know that at the epicenter of the world, New York City, they didn't need any of those extra capacities? And that was all set there because we had to flatten the curve to save the hospital system from what? Nothing. And now, even as they tell us the pandemic is raging, they are the ones who are destroying the hospital capacity, as well as everything else in society, because it's a plan to take us down. This is not about reacting to a pandemic. This is a stack of lies. And these people know it. Trump knows it. Franklin Graham knows it. You know it too now, right? You know it. You've been watching this. One commenter said, this is the single bravest thing I've seen in years with these pilots. God bless them. The heroes that we need right now. And boy, they sure are. And they are heroes with or without the support of the Texas governor. But with the support of the Texas governor, things are starting, the momentum is starting to build. And that's a really good thing. So thank God for that. In Florida, air traffic controllers, some more heroes. Federal air traffic controllers called in with a mass sick out to protest the vaccine mandate. And so as they pointed out, one pilot got on, one person tweeted out, Denise Sawyer of CBS said all flights into Florida have been canceled per the pilot. The announcement was just made while on the tarmac. The pilot told the full 737 Southwest air flight that we now have to deplane. He said Jacksonville air traffic control is understaffed. How did it get understaffed? Well, you know, it was understaffed by a press release, not an executive order, not a rule, but a press release by Biden that these corporations are far too happy to comply with. Right. They've kept people on the employment even as the economy is crashing down. And this whole thing began with Trump's lockdown. You're essential, you're not essential. You're essential, you're not essential. And things started spiraling down. And these people have relied on the government for handouts. That's what Trump did. You know, Biden's not about handouts. Like I said, that's the difference between the Republicans and Democrats. The Republicans will shower you with money if you help them along, just like Brad Little did in Idaho. The Democrats will just say, you do what I say or I'm going to hit you with a fine. That's the difference between them. And so these people are looking at the situation. They've got a big payroll. They don't have as much business by a long shot. I mean, the airline business has really, really, really shrunk. They need to shrink their workforce. They're happy to have an excuse. There is no executive order. There is no regulation, but there is an excuse based on a press release from Joe Biden for them to fire everybody. And this is exactly what the 2030 Great Reset is about. We need a plausible excuse to fire everybody and replace them with automation in order to remake our economy. We got to do it and say it's not us. You know, it's the virus, it's the president or whatever. So, air travel has been the tip of the spear since 9/11. In terms of tyranny. And this is part of 9/11, as I've said over and over again. Dark winter 2 months before 9/11, the anthrax attack 1 week later, the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act 2 months later after that, and the rehearsals for 20 years to do exactly what Trump did last year and Biden is doing right now. Southwest Airlines canceled close to 2,000 flights over the weekend. Actually, it's more than that. They did 1,800 on Saturday, and they did another 1,000 on Sunday. And then another 360 on Monday. So they had their highest rate. They canceled 29% of their schedule. Next in line was Allegiant, which canceled 6% of its flights. Big difference, isn't it? But it's weather. It's weather and it's air traffic control. No, it's the airline. American Airlines canceled 5% of their flights. Spirit canceled 4%. They canceled 29%, but it's simply the weather. As you look at how employees are being treated. In one hospital system based in Southern Oregon called Asante, one healthcare company, has fired a nurse because she will not take the vaccine. And they are recruiting her replacement using a picture of her. She had participated in an ad campaign a few years earlier. They had a picture of her in a kayak. And now they're putting this up, help build our team and get a bonus. They're now paying people a bonus to come on and take the shot and take her job. If she's angry about the way she's being exploited now, wait until she sees the way Trump and the GOP exploit her and do absolutely nothing to help her. See that over and over again. Good job, Asante. Feel free to share this with others. So we can know what kind of a company they're getting into. She explained that she had participated several years earlier in a campaign. That's how the company had the image. She says, I got a lot of regrets about that now. This has become a big slap in the face. A news anchor of 14 years out of Biloxi, Mississippi, went on television to say goodbye to people. She was hosting a Good Morning Mississippi out of Biloxi, Mississippi. She said, I just felt that I owed it to you to take a moment while I had an opportunity to say thank you for allowing me in your homes for the past several years. She said her immunity from a previous bout with COVID and other, quote, powerful reasons helped her to reach her decision. She said, I'm not here to spark a debate over the vaccine. I respect an individual's decision to get vaccinated. I believe one of the greatest things about being an American is enjoying certain rights, including those pertaining to personal health decisions. Well, I agree with that as well. Look, I support your informed consent. If you want to take a vaccine, that's your choice. But I'm not going to be quiet about it any more than I would be quiet about warning somebody who's about to step off a curb in front of a speeding bus. I would scream at the top of my lungs, and I don't know how to scream anymore than I'm doing now. I've been doing this for a long time, warning people about what's coming, warning people about the health implications of this, warning them about the legal and societal implications of these mandates as well. And that is my obligation. You know, we're talking about these people and how they are, that pilot who says, look, I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this to save your freedom. That's where the fight is right now. The fight for freedom isn't in Afghanistan, in Iraq. By the way, it never was. We had a lot of well-meaning people who thought it was, and they were deceived by their own government. And right now we have a government that is trying to deceive you about this war that they have engaged in each and every country in the planet. And it doesn't matter who the politicians are. You can take a young politician in Australia, Kurtz, and he's supposedly a populist and a conservative. Or you can take the liberal Democrats in Australia that are libertarians for limited government and lower taxes and gun ownership. Or you can take Trump, or you can take a radical leftist like Justin Trudeau, a globalist like Macron. They are all on the same plan. They even have the same time frame, within plus or minus a week or two, to force these mandates on people and to shut down hospitals and to shut down our society. Can you not see this as a plan? It is not, and I'll just quote Carl Hess, moderation in defense of justice is no virtue. And extremism in protecting liberty is no vice. I don't apologize for any of this stuff. I will not apologize for being called call me a conspiracy theorist, if you will. Those theories have proven correct. That's the way you do an investigation. Well, you know, what happens, who could have killed this woman? Could it be her husband? She had a big insurance policy. You start looking at things like that, and then you look to see if the evidence matches up. Well, guess what? It does. And there was a match for the evidence long before this. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't have some special insight. I pay attention and I do research. That's how I knew what was happening with this. And all the other people who were downplaying this to protect Trump, where I used to work at InfoWars, knew it as well. It was reprehensible for me to see that. Such a betrayal. Not of me, of the country. Not of me, but of their listeners and of the Constitution. In Canada, some Ontario towns will not let couples get a marriage without a vaccine passport. Can you believe this? But, you know, here's the thing. It's been a long time since governments in Western civilization even understood what marriage is about. So fine, I don't care. I don't need your permission. If we were going to get married today, I don't know if I would even bother to get a license. I thought it was kind of absurd when we did it before. It's like, I'm supposed to apply to them to get permission? Since when did the government have the authority to intrude itself in the relationship between me and Karen? They don't have the authority to do that. We understand what marriage is about. It's fundamentally a religious thing, right? And it's a commitment between two people. And it's a picture of Christ and the church. All of these different things. The government is just an interloper in this whole process. The history of all that, and I've talked about this in the past when they were talking about redefining marriage from the Supreme Court. And I said, you realize that marriages were always recorded at a local church. You know, they had the registry there. And the way the government got involved was back in the day when you didn't have the internet, or you didn't have much in terms of communication between different places. You could have these rascals who would go from one town to another. They would marry a woman in this place and then marry a woman somewhere else. And there was no central registry with any of that. And so that's how they started getting the government involved because of that. Biden saying vaccinated people are protected from COVID and they cannot spread it. How many times is he going to contradict the science from his own CDC director, Walensky? She is saying that they are protected. She doesn't say they won't get sick, but she made it very clear they spread it just the same as unvaccinated people. She said, well, you won't get really, really sick and you won't die. Well, that's not true either. We know that's not true, but that's the current narrative And he can't even get on board with the narrative. I loved what the Babylon Bee had yesterday. A silhouette of Joe Biden. You could see it was him. He said, White House whistleblower says he's being led from place to place by strangers and forced to read things off of a monitor, and they won't even give him enough ice cream. That was one of the best Babylon Bee headlines I've ever seen in my life. And so now this is what the strangers who are leading him from place to place are telling him to read. Except there's different scripts coming from different people in the Biden administration. So this script, this group of people, told him, he said, we still have more than a quarter of the people in the U.S. who are eligible for vaccinations but didn't get the shot. Oh, that's right. A majority of unvaccinated say they will not get the jab. This is a poll that was just taken. And they talked to 1,640 people about their vaccination status and their attitudes. They said a majority, 64% of them, were fully vaccinated. They had both jabs. 25% were hesitant. Of that 25%, 15% are hardcore nevers. Never me. That's me. I'm a never Trump shot. I'm a never Trump shotter. I will never get the Trump jab. Not ever. And then they said 6% were in process, had one shot. And another 5% said they're fixing to do it, as we say in the South. I don't know if, if they are hesitant and ashamed to say that they're hesitant. Well, I'm really thinking about it. I'm planning on doing it. I'm going to do it someday. I would say we got 30% of the people who are hesitant, and 15% of those are hardcore, never Trump shotters. CDC vax numbers have actually jumped up, not because of the mandate, writes Chris Minahan at informationliberation.com, not because of the mandate, but because people are getting boosters. Half of the people who, half of these shots that they're putting on, look at how the shots went up. See, it's working. Well, maybe it's working for United, or maybe not. Maybe the CEO there is lying. Maybe he's a dog-faced pony soldier lying. Maybe he's full of malarkey. I don't know. But the numbers are full of malarkey. And there's always, you know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, as Mark Twain said. So we're looking at the statistics, the worst lies about all this stuff. The reality is that they say that they've had 6 million shots administered, 6.7. In the September 30th to October the 6th, but 2.7 of those, million of those, were booster shots, almost half. That's NBC News reporting that. So I would just say, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me three times, shame on me. Shame on me, yeah. So these people who have now signed up for three of these shots, they truly have been boosted. And again, you know, boosted, we should go back to the Urban Dictionary. And the example that they had there of boosted, you know, it means in urban slang, it means lied to and ripped off. These people have been boosted. And I love the example that they had in the Urban Dictionary. This homie boosted my ride, so I shot him in the face. See, I can speak jive. College athletes have won. We've had a couple of different court cases now when we look at the legal aspects of it. Both of them coming out of Michigan, although they're two separate colleges. One of them is Michigan State University. The other one is Western Michigan University. And they're two federal court cases. People suing because they are being coerced into getting the jab. Now, college athletes who sued Western Michigan University on the grounds of religious liberty have now won, a three-judge panel in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And so these were 16 athletes who applied for religious exemption to the mandate, which the university said, well, we don't care. We don't care about your religion. We don't care about First Amendment, any of that stuff. So they sued. They were represented by the Great Lakes Justice Center. A shout out to them, because, folks, it's law firms like this that take up these cases that are very, very important. Again, I don't have much confidence in the legal system, but we should try every front that we can. And I'm glad that they're defending that. You know, I've talked about the people up in Canada, the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom, I think is the title of it. I interviewed one of the lawyers there, and they're doing great work there. And interestingly enough, in Canada, you know, they don't have the Bill of Rights like we do, but they have a charter in Canada, and the charter supports religious liberty. And so that organization there, that Canadian law firm that's there, and all these law firms, by the way, you know, like the Great Lakes Justice Center probably is the same way, the Justice Center for Constitutional or Charter Constitutional Freedoms, I think it is, and in Canada, they all exist on donations. So keep that in mind. And anyway, what he said was, he said it's just horrific what is happening to small businesses, and there's really not anything that we can do about that. But he said we have the charter freedoms that respect the freedom of religion, and that's the court cases that we're challenging. Even if they can't win, they have a basis to challenge it. And that's what we're seeing here with this, because the college athletes at the one Michigan university won when they stood on religious liberty. But then you have some employees at the other Michigan university who pushes this. And this is an employee at the school. I was looking to see if she had any title, but they just have her down as an employee. She entered a lawsuit based on her natural immunity. She'd had the disease, she'd recovered, which is a better training of your immune system than any vaccine would do if this were a real vaccine, but it's not. It's a genetic code injection to produce a toxic protein spike to make your body produce that, to make your body manufacture toxic protein spikes. So if this were a real vaccine, it would be training your immune system. Of course, that's not the purpose of this thing. The purpose of this thing is to kill you long term, right? And so anyway, she challenges it on the basis that she has natural immunity, and the court said no. So you have two federal cases, two Michigan universities, one of them based on religious liberty, the other one based on medical exemption, and they throw that one out. Reason Magazine says, even if requiring people, writing about this particular case, said even if requiring people who have been recovered from COVID-19 to be vaccinated is legal, that doesn't mean that it makes any sense. From a pragmatic standpoint, it makes no sense at all. Again, the purpose of a vaccine has always been to prevent you from getting sick, to expose you to something that is a pathogen that is dead or weakened. That's the theory. And by doing so, your body's immune system is trained, and your body's immune system will be what protects you. A therapeutic is something that directly attacks the pathogen or affects the condition. That's not what vaccines are. If you're sick, a vaccine isn't going to do you any good, even if it were a vaccine, even if it did work. And so it's there to train your immune system to prevent you from getting sick, not to treat the sickness. If somebody has recovered, their immune system has been trained. And if their immune system has been trained to fight something, it is trained for life. That's the way God designed it. It's got a better memory than an elephant. We should remember that. So it isn't just that it defies science to require this of people who have natural immunity. It's also morally wrong. It's also a violation of liberty. It's also a violation of the Constitution, our human rights, that governments were created to protect. It's a violation of all that. I love the people who come out and say, well, you know, George Washington required his soldiers to get smallpox vaccines, what they had at the time, you know, which is basically putting a cut in your arm and putting a scab that you hoped was dried up enough that you wouldn't actually get the disease. But we're talking about an army. We're talking about martial law. We don't want to have martial law in America. Vaccine mandates like that are martial law. That is not a something that we want to have. When we look at this, vaccine effectiveness has now dropped again. It is now as low as -86%. And those who are over 40%. This is the latest data from Public Health England. So all this stuff about how it works, no. Actually, your 86% more likely to get sick if you have it. We'll be right back. We've got something, a lot to say about what's going on with the New World Order, what is happening with the economy, and I've got a lot of letters that we have picked up from listeners I want to read to you. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, and I just want to cover a couple things that were sent in the mail. This is from, well, first of all, we received a contribution with no note and a very generous contribution from Grand Junction, Colorado. And I just want to say we received that. And thank you very much, whoever sent that. This is from Sandy. Says, as time goes along, I find the number of news sources I listen to and read is shrinking. And I appreciate your show more and more. I pop in my headphones and listen while I do housework. Thank you. Thank you, Sandy, and thank you for the support. This is from Robert. I have been a law enforcement officer for 19-plus years, and I value your perspective on many issues. At first, I thought you were anti-cop, but I've come to understand the cops you speak of have become anti-American and against the Constitution. Yeah. Thank you. That's exactly right. So thank you for listening and for understanding that. He says, thank you for your honesty and integrity. May God bless this gift and cause your cup to overflow. Even though we have never met, I consider you a brother and a friend. Well, thank you, brother. That's Robert. And I would just say, you know, I've said over and over again, when I talk about the police, when I talk about something that's happened that's gone wrong, and I frequently go back to Frank Serpico. You may remember the movie that was done by Al Pacino. And he was an honest cop, and he refused to take a bribe. And it made the other people that were working there, the dishonest cops who were taking bribes for the drug business, made them not trust him and made them very, very upset. It's like, you know, we want everybody in on this because if you're not in on this, you could turn and you could expose us, right? So we want to have something on you. They wanted him to participate in the bribery, really to protect themselves. And, you know, it is kind of interesting, isn't it, that people are so adamant that you participate with them. I used to... Let me not get off on that tangent. But you know, they eventually shot him in the face. He went to live in Switzerland and so forth because he was a man of integrity. But he's not the only one that does that. Frank Serpico used to give interviews. A lot. He's pretty elderly now. One of the things he said was, you know, we always need to be correcting things. He said, any institution that you have, whether it's a police or it's any other institution, is always going to have bad people in it. That's just the nature of society. And even if somebody's not a bad person, they're going to do bad things. And so to protect the institution and to protect that individual, that's something that we see in churches as far as discipline goes. You know, a good church is going to be a church that's going to discipline you when you do something wrong. And if you refuse that discipline and you continue to ignore that, they push you out for your own good, hoping that you will see what is wrong with that. And that's the same thing that should be done in any institution. right? You're always reforming the individual, but you're also reforming the institution. What Frank Serpico said, he said, we're always going to have bad apples in the police. And if we don't get rid of them, it will corrupt the institution. Now, the thing that's concerning me is that we've seen over this last year, whenever you see police officers, whether it's in areas like Portland or Seattle, or it's other places where they're forcing them to enforce orders about masks or whatever it was at the time, and they said, no, I'm going to do that. I swore to the Constitution. What do? They fire those people. Same thing we're seeing in Australia. They fire the people. And so they're purging themselves right now of good people. That's a really concerning thing. But it was also in New York, Adrian Schoolcraft. And his father was a police officer. He very much believed in the mission, and he was not happy with the corruption that he was seeing in the New York City Police Department. And so he started recording what was happening. And after a while, they realized that he was recording, and they came to his apartment, the number two guy at the New York Police Department and some other people, and he had a camera that was up on the shelf that was recording. First they had punished him. When they realized that he wasn't going to arrest people for petty stuff, but he was there to protect them against crime and to keep the peace and things like that, they got really angry with him. And they punished him by making him walk a beat. And that only made him happy because he said, that's what I think the police are supposed to do. It lets me get to know the community. You know, I don't want to harass people all the time. They were harassing people and saying, well, you're not going to smoke in a barbershop, for example. And if you want to take it outside and smoke out there. So some of the barbers who smoked would stop and they would go outside and they would stand on the sidewalk and smoke. And so then the cops would come up and harass them and give them a ticket for loitering in front of their own store smoking because they were allowed to smoke outside. They weren't allowed to smoke. And so they'd give them a ticket on loitering. And that was what Adrian Schoolcraft was against. He was adamant against that. One of the things that they did was on a Halloween, they said, just go out and round up anybody that you can, bring them in, we'll book them, and we'll figure out what we can charge them with later. He wanted to have nothing to do with that kind of a system, and he was exposing it. And so they found out that he was recording them. They went to his apartment, and they had the dialogue. They dialogued like a, you know, like the supervillains do in the movies. And it was all on camera. They found the camera on him. They took him away. He disappeared. His father, the cop, the retired cop, and looking for him, went back to his apartment and found that camera and saw it. And he realized that because one of the things they said, they were going to commit him to a mental institution. And they did, quietly committed him to a mental institution to make him disappear. And so his father got him out of there. And I never could get him on for an interview because he was still getting threats from the corrupt police in New York, he and his father. And so they were just trying to lay low at that point. We need to have the police, the honest police. They are our best hope, really, in rolling this thing out and stopping this and nullification. Peace officers, people who take their oath to the Constitution, who don't see themselves as revenue generators for the local police, but as somebody who's going to keep the police and keep the peace and protect people. Well, we vitally need them. And they're going to be our best ally. So I'm not anti-cop at all. When Sheriff Mack was on, we were talking about that. I said, yeah, you know, he said, get to know your police in your area. Make sure that you make contact with them. Kind of find out where they are. Right now is a great time because of this tyranny that's rolling out. And the police are seeing this as well. It's like, do I really want to live in a society like that? Where there's no rule of law, there's no protection, there's just these arbitrary mandates that are coming out, and they can be as ruthless and as capricious as possible. Do I really want to live in a system like that? And so you find the local sheriff who is elected. That's the key thing. Different from these appointed police chiefs who answer to the people who hired them, not to the voters. But the ideal model in this country was the local sheriff and some professional deputies, and then the power of the community, the posse comitatus, the posse that was armed and would be under them and would work with them if there was an emergency. That's really what we do need to have. So thank you very much, Robert. I appreciate that. And I'll get to some more of these in just a moment. I want to, before I jump into the New World Orders, this Fauci documentary, this is a tweet. that somebody put up. I just finished the Fauci documentary. Can you grab that picture? Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Yeah, zoom in real big on that picture. I just finished the Fauci documentary on Disney Plus, so that you don't have to. Here's what it was. For me, the defining image. And he shows this. Fauci at work in his home office beneath a larger-than-life oil painting portrait of himself. And when I first looked at this, and Karen had the same comment, it almost looks like this Norman Rockwell self-portrait, you know, where he's in front of a monitor that's all white, and it's almost like you've all seen the Norman Rockwell self-portrait, where he's looking at himself, and he's painting a picture of himself as he's doing it. But there it is, a giant picture. Some of the people who commented on that tweet said, I can't believe he keeps it in his office. I keep a life-size oil painting of myself right above the mantle so everybody can see it. Another one. I only have a bust of myself. I don't have a full-size oil painting. And finally, Fauci, quote, colon, I love me. I love some me. So, yeah, I really do love myself. Yeah, that's really what this is about, isn't it? Let's take a look at the New World Orders. And, you know, I look at the total chaos that is being foistered everywhere. Rikers Island, a famous prison up in New York, outside New York City, is in total chaos. The inmates are running the asylum, so to speak, or the prison. They have seized near total control over New York City's Riker Island jail. Now, I mention this because they're saying the prisoners are wandering freely, they're running food distribution, and they're committing more crimes. And the bottom line is they've taken over the prison. So, see, there is hope for us in this global gulag. If they can do it at Rikers Island, we should be able to do this on the outside, right, as they put us all under house arrest. But it's really pretty bad there. They said detainees in some of the buildings have seized near total control over the entire units, deciding on who can enter and leave them. They're also doing interviews with people on the outside. Yeah, New York is a basket case, isn't it? I mean, it's just crazy. Listen to this. They're flouting the rules against smoking tobacco and marijuana. They're able to get marijuana in the prison. And this has always been the case, by the way. I used to talk about this with drug prohibition. I said, if you got, and you do have, several hundred people, typically about 200 people a year, in federal prisons dying of drug overdoses, while it was not legal, nothing was legal. Of course, they're not dying of an overdose of marijuana, but they were getting hard drugs. And so you had about 200 people who were dying of overdoses and drugs in the prisons every year. And I said, so what does that tell you about the efficacy of prohibition? I mean, how is that happening? Well, they're bribing people. You know, it corrupts law enforcement. It corrupts prison guards and things like that. And, you know, you can't even stop it in prisons. As a matter of fact, one of the things that drew that to my attention was a story that was out of Baltimore, Maryland. And it was a mother who had a son who was addicted to drugs. And she had tried everything to try to stop him, except Christ. And so she called the police on him. Said, well, if they can lock him up, that'll give him a chance to go cold turkey and get off it, kick this habit. And he died of an overdose of drugs in prison. And she was saying, how could this happen? Yeah, exactly. Several of them have stolen keys and then used them to free other people in custody, who then went on to commit acts of violence, including slashing other people. I mean, this is total anarchy. It's like Escape from New York, isn't it? Get out before it's too late. Who knows? It may spread out of Rikers. You know, you got de Blasio still there. It could get much worse than just Rikers Island. Speaking of being in prison and being hunted down and being called a radical terrorist, Dr. Robert Malone, you know, this is the guy who invented mRNA vaccines, who said, I'm very concerned about this. He's blowing the whistle on this. And he says, I've been labeled as a terrorist. He said, in the Italian press, they actually called me a terrorist when I was in Rome for the International COVID Summit. He said, what was my crime? I advocated for early treatment of the disease. And I suggest that in and of itself, being called a terrorist for advocating for early treatment, he says, I think that merits a bit of meditation. In other words, think about that. Think about that. Think about the society that we're creating here. And, of course, a really key part of this is the First Amendment. To take away the First Amendment, to take away people's ability to speak. And as he points out, he and other doctors, he said, are being hunted. Hunted by the press. Hunted by medical boards. Hunted down to be punished. Because they speak out against the government-approved narrative. So, you know, it's quite frankly, you know, when I look at this and I look at where we are right now, as they're rolling out at this stage, attempting to fire people who don't get the vaccine. And again, it's a very, very positive step. I'm really happy to see Greg Abbott do the right thing. And he's supporting or prohibiting the vaccine apartheid of people in the public square. No passports to get into businesses, and he is also prohibiting private companies from firing people who are not vaccinated. And it's going to have a big impact on the Southwestern thing, I think, Southwestern Airlines. But, folks, we're at the eye of the storm right now. I mean, if we don't turn this back right now, it's going to get a lot worse, because I'm telling you what comes next. If they're capable of, and I just told you, you know, there's anywhere from 15 to 30% of the people who don't want to get a vax. You know, we still have a chance for those 15% of the people who are kind of soft. They're hesitant, but they're kind of soft. You got 15% that are hardcore, never Trump shotters, and another 15% that are, well, I don't know. So we're talking about anywhere from 15 to 30% of the workforce purged. Think about how disruptive that's going to be. But beyond that, if they can do that, and if they have the will to burn down our society in order to push this vaccine, what is the next thing they're going to do? Well, you know they're going to say that you filthy, unvaccinated, typhoid Mary rats that are out here spreading the bubonic plague, you unvaccinated people. It's not just enough to kick you out of society. The next step, and I told you what that looked like in Lithuania yesterday. The next step is to put us in prison. They're not going to let people, as they create this fear and loathing of people who are unvaccinated, they're not going to allow us to walk around freely. They're going to put us in a prison. And so we need to push back against this right now, because prison camps, FEMA camps, are the next step. They've already started preparing these things months ago. In Australia, doing news reports, bragging about how wonderful they were and how they're going to be long term. They're not going to, if they're going to expel you from getting into society, going to work, traveling, going to school, all these other things, it's just a matter of time before they lock you into these prisons. I'm telling you, that's where this is headed. So we got to do something about that. those concerns that he has now are being echoed by Finland, Denmark, Sweden, and also Iceland. Iceland is also saying that. But Malone tweeted out, Dr. Robert Malone, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine concept, said, I'm going to speak bluntly. Physicians who speak out are being actively hunted via medical boards and the press. They're trying to delegitimize us and pick us off one by one. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a fact. Please wake up. This is happening globally. That's right. It is a global agenda. And as I reported last week, he had his IP address blocked by the New England Journal of Medicine. Why? The New England Journal of Medicine has been at the very epicenter of all of this. They have been making political calculations and plans and manipulations, how to psychologically manipulate people, but also from the very beginning saying, we don't want this to be done through a government order. We want it done through corporate coercion, because we don't want due process challenges on this. So that had absolutely nothing to do with medicine. It had everything to do with pushing, relentlessly pushing, vaccine mandates at the expense of everything else. So he said, I know how to get around the IP block. But he goes, this is a very petty move by these people. So let's talk a little bit about masks as well, because there's been some updates on masks, especially with children. That seems to be where they're focused on right now. And I've got an article here from The Atlantic. And this is a woman who was talking about her son in kindergarten that she named, wait for it, Huxley. So I'm going to give you her perspective on it. But before I do, I want to play for you this video that was on social media. People are putting it up and saying, well, a new commercial has just dropped for homeschooling. Look at this video.
2, 3. I wear a mask to school. I wear a mask
kids masked
to school.
Up on the floor.
Hi ho the Dario. I wear a mask to school. It helps to keep me safe. It helps to keep me safe. Hi ho the Dario. It helps to keep me safe. It keeps my friends safe. It keeps my friends safe. Hi ho the Dario. It keeps my friends safe. And let me see a hooray! Put your hands up in the air!
What is really sick about that is that teacher is proud of that. She thinks she's doing a great job. And so this writer from The Atlantic says masks are changing how kids interact. She's just now figuring this out, by the way. So she says, on the third day of kindergarten, my son Huxley reported that another kid kicked him on the playground. You know, I look at this, it's like, who in the world would name their kid after Huxley? You know, you got Aldous Huxley, wrote Brave New World, and you got his brother, Julian Huxley, who coined the term transhumanism, right? The guy is, both of them, full-on elitist, technocrats, eugenicists, the whole works. So you're going to name your kid after either one of those guys? She said Huxley told me, I just can't get past the name. Huxley told me that another kid had kicked him on the playground. He said, but he had a frustration because he couldn't figure out who it was. He said the kid had been wearing a purple mask at the time of the incident, but the next day nobody in Huxley's class was wearing a purple mask. She said, it hadn't occurred to me until that moment to fret about the social impact that masks might have on my own son. I'd been so relieved that his public elementary school in San Francisco would require them. But here we are. Huxley couldn't tell his new classmates apart. He had trouble hearing them. He wasn't sure whether they could hear him. I mean, I've interviewed a psychologist who was talking about the severe psychological damage that's being done on these kids. The panic and the fear and the OCD aspect of keeping them in a constant state of fear about everything, and then making the mask their security blanket. And he was talking about in his own practice. He said a mother came in with her child, and, you know, they were wearing the mask. He goes, that's all right. You don't have to wear the mask here. And the mom takes hers off, and she's, and, you know, and he says, you can take your mask off. We can talk. And the child says, I might kill my mom. And I keep that mask on. And she says, it's okay, you can take it off. No, I might. That's how thoroughly indoctrinated he was. So there's that aspect of it that she's not even talking about here in this Atlantic article. And that is the gaslighting of absolute total fear and creating an obsessive compulsive disorder about this mask that has absolutely no efficacy. None whatsoever. We're talking about cloth masks that these kids are wearing. And again, I'll just remind you, I've said it many times. 2002, one of the best examples of this, because not only did they thoroughly debunk it, they had multiple studies in Australia, where all this stuff is rolling out, had multiple studies saying, a lot of doctors don't even wear these masks in the operating room. And, we did studies, and it absolutely has no effect on anything, really. You know, these are primarily for dust masks, you know, for big particles. And they said even in terms of spit particles, after 15 to 20 minutes, it becomes so saturated with moisture that it actually makes things worse because it breaks that up into smaller particles. And they travel farther, and they stay airborne longer. So there's absolutely no reason behind it. And the reason that story was written was because the Australian government official at the time was threatening, 2002, 2003, there was MERS that was happening in Asia, and they're close to Asia, and all the Asians are putting these masks on to make themselves feel better. And they were threatening in Australia. They said, if you sell these masks, telling people that they have the mask, they're not going to get sick, we're going to hit you with fines up to $100,000 Australian. Because that's fraudulent. That's how strongly the government in Australia understood the science at the time, multiple studies, and said this is totally fraudulent. And if you deceive people like this to sell them a mask, we're going to hit you with a fine. Well, we were deceived in order to sell a vaccine. We were deceived with these masks by Fauci and the rest of these people. Republicans stood on the sidelines and did nothing from Trump on the way all the way down all last year. And so now there's another aspect of this, and that is, of course, you know, so there's the OCD fear and the mask being sold as a security blanket. But there's also the physiological issue that, number one, it doesn't help. Number two, it's a dirty diaper. And you can see the face rash on people. You can see the increased viral load on kids who are forced to wear this for 7-8 hours a day. It also decreases their oxygen, which also makes them more susceptible to disease. So it has a physiological detrimental thing. It has a psychological detriment to it. But it has another psychological issue, which is what she's writing about. The second psychological issue is the fact that they are not developing their facial recognition skills. And I've talked about this before as well. This is nothing new. This is just new to her after watching Huxley, her son. Some psychologists and educators worry that such impairment in facial processing can lead to a spate of challenges with socialization and communication. You think? She said, nevertheless, still, we know that masks reduce the spread of COVID. She's clueless about that. They don't. They have absolutely no efficacy with that. But she says, Judith Lowes, a psychology researcher at the University of Stirling in Scotland who studies children and face perception, told me that people with face blindness, which is a diagnosable condition which people struggle to remember and to differentiate faces, often use other cues to identify people, such as clothing, mannerisms, or voice. She said, quite commonly, people use shoes. Now, remember that, because this is the punchline on her story. They use shoes sometimes to recognize people. She said, social and emotional education, teaching kids how to interact, how to make friends, and how to, well, you know, be a human in this world, is good for everybody, even students who aren't struggling with masks. This used to be the red herring that they would throw out about homeschooling. Oh, the kids are not socialized. It's like, homeschooling kids I knew were socialized. They were socialized to be able to talk to people of all ages, actually. And there's plenty of interaction that they would get with extracurricular activity, with homeschooling cooperatives, with sports and hobbies, with church. It's so many different opportunities to just live their lives, right? They're not being kept in a closet all day. So, yeah, they were very well adjusted compared to the other kids. It's been my experience. But, you know, in this particular instance, she says, well, even though I'm very concerned about this, none of the psychologists or teachers I spoke with were worried about the long-term social impacts. Well, she didn't speak to the right psychologists. I mean, what kind of a psychologist would not be concerned about this? Because this is something that is very, very important. And if it is deprived of the kids, and that's what this is all about. This is about making, rather breaking, that human-to-human contact in every way possible. In every way possible, but especially with the youngest children. They want to make sure that you are connected to each other only through internet portals that they can watch. They want to make sure that you are connected to people, not literally, that you're afraid of open spaces, that you're afraid of individuals. They want to monitor everything that you do, and they want to isolate you. She said she talked to a librarian who was concerned about her daughter, who was experiencing something similar. So the teachers aren't concerned. The psychologists in the schools are not concerned. The politicians are not concerned, but the parents are, because the parents can see what's happening. And so this librarian says, it's like, who is my friend and who isn't? Are they teasing me with a smile or are they not? That's what her daughter told her. She says, I can't read people's emotions. I don't really know where they're coming from. And, of course, we all know that from having the experience of, you know, interacting with people who are wearing masks over this last year. And she finishes up the story. Here's the punchline. Remember I said that about sometimes they recognize people by their voice or by their clothing or by their mannerisms or by their shoes? She said, so at dinner recently, Huxley told me that he had approached a girl in his class during free time and boldly asked her, do you want to play? It wasn't even embarrassing, he said incredulously. So I asked him, was he able to identify which girl it was? And he said, yes, because she always wears pink shoes. This is sick. This is sick what we're doing to people in this society. This is a mass delusion that has happened to our society. So let's go to Florida, where things are not quite so crazy. The Florida Board of Education has now defunded school districts that are forcing students to wear these kinds of masks. Good for them. A lot of good things have come out of Florida. A lot of good things. DeSantis and Republicans there have been leading in that. And look, just like Abbott, he'll always cheer the vaccine. And so you take what you can get from these guys and you watch them. But they've been there first, and they've done the most of anybody to oppose these things. And you've got to applaud them for that and support them for doing that right thing. So here's what is happening in the battle between, it's about eight boards of education in Florida that are pushing really hard against this. And, of course, they're allied. They're heavily Democrat. They're allied with Biden. And they're pushing to mandate masks on kids. And Ron DeSantis and the Republicans are pushing against that. So it's a legal battle with Joe Biden. As LifeSite News puts it, over the rights of citizens to make their own health choices. That's exactly what it is. As well as the state of Florida's authority to make and enforce its own rules without any federal interference. That's the other part of this. Again, it's a struggle. Where are the lines of authority? And also to support parental rights as well. And they make that case in the article here. At its October 7th meeting, the Florida Board of Education, so this is the state board of education, unanimously agreed to impose financial penalties for school districts who are mandating students wear masks to allegedly stem the spread of COVID-19. Eight school districts in the state have now had state funds withheld because of their illegal mandates, while the names of three districts were removed from Thursday's agenda when they shelved their mandates ahead of the Board of Education's vote. So the way I understand that, they originally had 11 school districts that were going to rebel against this. Eight are still hanging in there, and three of them said, ooh, okay, never mind. We will drop the mask mandate instead of going to war with the state over this. The board, now this is the clever part here, right? Because this could easily be circumvented by the Department of Education, the Federal Department of Education, which should not even exist. It was created by Jimmy Carter midway through his administration. Ronald Reagan campaigned on the fact that he's going to get rid of the Department of Education. You had Charlotte Isherby, other people, went there to shut the thing down, and instead they grew it. And instead, after 8 years, Reagan had taken a Democrat, William Bennett, and put him in as education czar. That's how bad it was. And so Charlotte Isherby wrote the book, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, to expose what was going on with the federalization of education. So they've got this Department of Education in Washington. It's been used to push things centrally on people like Common Core, like critical race theory, and all these other things. You know, it's been a big force for disrupting the school systems. And of course, they've got a lot of money being a federal organization. And so the school board, the Florida school board, knows that the Federal Department of Education is going to try to circumvent their financial penalties by subsidizing it. You know, many people, when I say, you know, here we are, day 575 of America held hostage, and I trace it back to Trump's executive order, I say, well, he didn't do it. It's the Democrat governors. He funded it. That's how you get people to do anything in Washington. Everybody knows that game. So look at this. DeSantis and the Florida Board of Education are saying, we're going to withhold funding from you if you don't do what we say. And then the feds under Biden are saying, we will give you money if you do what we say. That's the tug of war. Who are they going to get money from? It's always used as a carrot or a stick. That's how they're putting guys and girls' dressing rooms in showers. They're saying, well, we got you hooked on this money from Washington, and now we're going to pull that back if you don't do what we say. So they say, all right, we'll do what you say. So the State Board of Education in Florida moved to block the Biden administration from supplying federal taxpayer dollars to replace the funds withheld by the state. How did they do it? Well, they said, if you get money from the federal government, we will enact fines against you to take that money away. I love that. That's great. And see, it's a tug of war about money. Money is, see, that's why the Federal Reserve and this corrupt system of fiat currency is at the root of all of this stuff. These people have unlimited amounts of money. And now they're talking about modern monetary theory, MMT. I call it the magic money tree, where there's no accountability. You've got Janet Yellen, who used to be head of the Federal Reserve, who's now the head of the Department of Treasury for Biden. And she's saying, we can just forget about a debt ceiling. Who cares, right? Let's just print this stuff up and use it to bribe people. We've got monopoly money here. We can get people to do anything we want with that money. That's why I say, you know, that if you excuse that with Trump, you really don't understand how the government, the federal government, operates. It's the monopoly money that they get from the Federal Reserve, and they have unlimited amounts of that, and they can bribe people with it. You know, we used to play, we get together, play board games and stuff, and we play scruples. And, you know, they'll ask you a question, you know, and some kind of an ethical question or moral question, and there's money attached to it. You know, would you do X for this amount of money? And then, you know, you draw another card later on, and you see kind of the same moral or ethical issue, and yet there's more money involved with it. And so it's just like, okay, how much? Okay, you won't do it for that. Let me up the end. And we saw this with vaccine hesitancy, didn't we? Bribing people with money. It's always that. Maybe that's why Christ said the root of all evil is the love of money, right? Broward County. In the news again, Broward received a $421,000 grant from the Biden administration after refusing to leave masking up to families. I like the way LifeSite News put it. That's exactly what it was, right? Taking away parental rights. They have already been hit with a $70,000 penalty by the state, and the district is likely to lose another $456,000, equal to the amount of its federal grant as well as 1 month's salaries for the defiant school board members. I love that. See, they're being smart about this, and they understand how the game is being played. They're not suing them in court over this. See, that's the other thing I like about what they're doing in Florida under DeSantis. They're not taking this to a federal court and asking some politically appointed judge to rule for them. You know, you'll go to one level of the court and you'll get somebody that was appointed by Trump, and another one you'll get somebody appointed by Obama, and it'll be a tug of war back and forth. They're going to make these determinations based on their political allegiances, not on the rule of law. And so I like the fact that in Florida, they're going in and saying, oh yeah, well, you do that, and we're going to fine you. Well, that's okay, we'll get money from Washington. Okay, we'll up the ante, and we'll take away all that money that you got from Washington, and then some, and we'll take away your salary too. This is a poker game, folks. It's a poker game, and you've already had 3 of the 11 counties fold their hand. Meanwhile, Alachua County is set to lose $148,000 in funding, equal to its federal grant, plus $13,000, equivalent to the monthly salary of its school board members. They're doing this to all of them. Florida's education commissioner said, quote, by their own terms, these grants encourage school districts to violate Florida law. If the federal government can simply backfill or buy off school districts with grants, then the state's enforcement authority is neutralized, nullified, and abolished. And so what they're doing is they're nullifying Daddy Warbucks and his big cash generating machine at the Federal Reserve. They're nullifying that. It's like, all right, keep it coming. You know, you give the money to Broward County and we'll up the fines and we'll take it back from them. So essentially it's a pipeline straight to them. They'll keep fining Broward County. Good for them. They're not backing down. Excellent. That's the way to do it. In the UK, you have a former UK finance chief. Finance chief. Saying we have to reduce the population in order to save the planet. Because that's where these people are coming from. They've always been there. They've always been pushing this idea. Gaia is Mother Earth. It's a sentient being. And we, humans, are a virus that needs to be eradicated. That is behind what all of these bankers are doing. What all these central bankers and finance chiefs are doing. It's behind this Pope Francis and his climate encyclical. And the person who wrote it for him, John Schellenhuber. These people are all about population reduction. Which, if you understand that, makes you all the more cautious about these vaccines, doesn't it? A declining native population will enhance prosperity, they say. Yeah, they've been selling that lie for a long time. But listen, he talks about how we have to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions and all the rest of this stuff, right? He says, if only Britain, this finance minister, said if only Britain could cut carbon emissions by approximately 38 million tons by 2035, it could experience a similar decline in population to Japan if they were to do that. Expected to see a drop in Japan of 9.6% in population. That is a big demographic crisis for Japan, frankly. Now, they're looking at that and saying, oh, no, that's not a problem because, you know, we're going to replace it with the people, with robots, with artificial intelligence. We have unlimited ability to manufacture things out of thin air with nanotechnology and on, right? All of this stuff. And this is what this guy is pushing. He wants to see Britain drop a population by 10% so they can cut the emissions of, and don't you love it when they call it carbon? Well, that makes it sound really dirty, doesn't it? They're talking about carbon dioxide. And I've reported many times about these reporters who don't understand the difference between carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide, you know, carbon monoxide is poisonous. That's some of the gases. If you close the door and turn on your engine, you can commit suicide of carbon monoxide. Carbon dioxide, however, is what you and I exhale. It's what all animals exhale. It's the stuff of life because carbon dioxide is not evil. It's not dirty. It's necessary for life. That's the way God designed it. Carbon dioxide is what plants need to live. What we breathe out is what they need to live. It's called a symbiotic relationship in biology. And so they breathe in the carbon dioxide we breathe out. They give us back the oxygen. They grow and they create food that we eat. Or we eat the food that eats the food. If we're carnivores. But that's not it's not an evil. It's not something that we want to get rid of. It's something that we like. It's something that we really need. Let's take a quick break here, and I'm going to talk about the New World Order's job growth, the depression that is being engineered. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars,
let's go,
and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Yeah, and before we get into the new world orders, which, by the way, you know, you see them pivoting increasingly back to climate change. And there's a lot of fraud going on with climate change. As a matter of fact, I went hysterical when I saw this headline from the BBC. Prince Charles says, "My Aston Martin runs on wine and cheese." Well, I wonder how much that cost him a gallon. They put so much taxes on petrol in the UK that maybe it's cheaper to run it on wine. But I wonder, you know, how much his fine wines that he's able to buy by the gallon really go. And I saw that, and it immediately took me back to Wallace and Gromit. Show a picture of Wallace and Gromit. Anybody that doesn't remember that, remember? I mean, doesn't this guy look a bit like a cartoon version of Prince Charles? And he had, it was a wonderful claymation that was done out of the UK. I highly recommend that to you. If you don't know it, if you do know it, you probably remember his infatuation with cheeses. And that is just unbelievable. Yeah, he's going to run his Aston Martin on cheese. And that is such a picture of the elitism behind all of this stuff, isn't it? Just unbelievable. Meanwhile, now, before we get into the economic issues of supply chains and jobs, there's also the energy aspect of this and the grid. The entirety of Lebanon went dark on Saturday. Mass power outage to last for several days. On Saturday, the entirety of Lebanon was plunged into darkness with the electricity grid shut down completely after the small Mediterranean country's two main power stations reportedly ran out of fuel. They don't have any more wine and cheese. So they said the supplies of diesel were apparently exhausted, and energy production dropped to below 200 megawatts. That's unbelievable. So this is the future that they have planned for us, quite frankly. This is the center of all this stuff. What we saw happening with this medical tyranny, as I've mentioned many, many times, all the details, all the objectives that they had for climate change were all the same objectives that they had for this pandemic. And now they're moving back to the climate change in a big way. And that's been one of the key focus of Biden throughout all this. They said some Lebanese interviewed by the Middle East Eye told the publication that moving about in an entirely darkened city at night is like, quote, reliving the Civil War, in reference to the lengthy war and the collapse of infrastructure that gripped the country from 1975 to 1990. Yeah, because guess what? This is a civil war. This is a civil war to take down our infrastructure, our energy, our jobs, our homes, our food supply, our transportation, every aspect of our independence and liberty. This is a civil war. It is a global war of every government against its own people. That's what this is about. And it really, really is like reliving the Civil War. Just an aside, one of Karen's relatives retired in Florida, and she met a rich guy. And he's got a yacht, and he's taking around all these different places. And she had always wanted to go to Rwanda. Go figure. That is not on my bucket list. If you know anything about Rwanda, you talk about civil wars. That's what made me think of it. The Hutus and the Tutsis coming after each other. That was one of the horrific things early. I don't know if it was. I know the movie. It had already happened. I think it was in the 90s that happened. Well, there was a movie done about the middle 2000s called Hotel Rwanda. It had Don Cheadle, who's been in some of the Marvel things, and he was one of the stars in it. And they had them in a hotel. He and his wife owned a hotel. He was one tribe, and she was the other. You know, the Hutus and the Tutsis were fighting each other. And so he was one of them, let's say a Hutu, and she was a Tutsi. And so the way the movie is set up is like, you know, can't we just get along? But, you know, they were being pulled and pushed by this divided population that was there. And, if you don't think that we can have a civil war, you know, you look at people who were very, very, very much alike with each other, just, you know, like the Hatfields and McCoys, except much, much worse. The Hutus and the Tutsis. What are we going to do when there's this narrative that is being bought into by the other side, saying the unvaccinated people are diseased animals and we've got to contain them? So, we should be very concerned about that. But anyway, first of all, to be traveling like this in these crazy times, and you're always at the whims of different governments and the random vagaries of the PCR test, and that really, they got caught up in that. So, first they went to Paris, and then they decided, her bright idea was to go to Rwanda. And they went to Rwanda, and they tested, one of them tested positive. Not sick, but tested positive. So now they are in quarantine in Hotel Rwanda, a hotel in Rwanda. Don't know how that's going to end up. Never saw that coming, did she? India faces rolling blackouts as a coal shortage is forcing power plants to adopt emergency measures. Now, this is the same thing that's happening in China. Both China and India, not subject to all the restrictions that you hear everybody talking about with the Paris Climate Accord. Remember, that's going to be the way to save the planet. Well, the Paris Climate Accord doesn't put any caps on what India and China can do. They have the most power plants, the dirtiest power plants anywhere on the planet. As a matter of fact, India's power plants are so dirty, the ones that power the grid, that if you have a gasoline engine that gets 35 miles per gallon in your car, you are cleaner than somebody who is powering an electric car off of the grid there because their grid is so dirty. So it's not a problem. Even though we're told this is global warming and it's a global problem and we've all got to chip in and help, not India, not China. But India and China are having a problem now because they can't get coal. They were getting coal from other sources, and now because everybody said, well, coal is a dirty thing, you can't have coal, so now they can't get the coal to run their infrastructure. And they are having rolling blackouts just like China is doing. China had to eat crow, eat coal, if you will, and get coal from Australia, even though they were trying to punish Australia. They desperately need what Australia has. This appears to be a man-made crisis. Oh, yeah, just as the crisis of medical oxygen supplies during the COVID second wave. It's one man-made, I'd say government-made, right? We like to talk about man-made global warming. Well, we've got one government-made, global government-made crisis after the other. This is just the latest examples of this. Industry insiders warn that the winter blackouts across the U.S. are possible as U.S. heating oil supplies are the lowest in decades. So it's not just India. It's not just China. We're looking at power supply issues throughout Europe. Why? Because the renewable windmills are not putting out. And so this has sent shocks throughout their infrastructure. And we're not immune to that either, as we saw this last winter here in Texas, because we had bought into the windmills. And industry insiders are now warning that we're going to have winter blackouts because we've got a shortage of heating oil. And, of course, the number one priority of Biden when he came in was to shut down pipelines, right, to make sure this is going to happen. The UK's biggest source of greenhouse gas is, wait for it, an eco-power station. Yeah, this is an environmentally friendly power station, but is their biggest source of greenhouse gases. So, when you look at this, it's very similar to what's going on with the cult of the vaccine that Matt Taibbi talked about yesterday. He said it was kind of interesting that as soon as Merck, which did not get into the vaccine sweepstakes, well, actually they did, but then they dropped out early, they came up with a therapeutic, kind of like ivermectin. As a matter of fact, many people believe that it's just kind of reformulated ivermectin, which they were the creators of. They reformulated it to get a patent. They got tens of millions of dollars from the federal government. It cost them $17 to manufacture, and they're going to sell it for over $700. They're going to have a 40-time markup, a 4,000% markup. If you and I were to sell something like that, we would probably have the Federal Trade Commission coming in for fraud to make that kind of a profit margin. Nobody has a 4,000% profit margin. The only way you get a 4,000% profit margin is if you buy influence with a politician. I've mentioned that many times. Look at the return on investment for buying a Biden, for example. Or there's other flavors of politicians like Pelosi's. You can buy a Pelosi or a Biden, and you can get 2,000 or 3,000% return on your investment. Or if you buy a Fauci and an FDA, you can get a 4,000% return on your investment. So, you know, when we look at how this whole thing is rolling out, the as Matt Taibbi said, he was surprised at how short a period of time happened before Merck came out with their scam, and you have the massive pushback against them by the cult of the vaccine, as Matt Taibbi pointed out, the cult of the vaccine, because nothing can be allowed except for the vaccine. This is one of the reasons why I say that I think there's more to this involved than just greed and profits. And I've said that all along. Yes, they are making obscene amounts of money with these vaccines. Yes, Trump gave them $20 billion to start with and then kept piling the cash into their coffers. And yes, by socializing the research and development of this stuff and the manufacturing of it, delivering it for free with the military, and then paying them in addition to all of that, you have minted 9 new billionaires, individual billionaires who are, you know, high-ranking officials at these vaccine companies. So it is a rapacious act of corruption, crony capitalism. It's all the things the Republicans claim they're against. But then when you look at what's happening with Merck, it's all of those things, right, in terms of the money aspect. But what's missing with this is the fact that if you've got a therapeutic, then that destroys all your need to be able to do contact tracing and a global ID. See, this is why Bill Gates was focused on ID 2020 and on IA 2030. He wanted everybody to have a global ID by 2020. He wanted everybody to have global vaccination, everyone, everywhere, every age by 2030. Those two things are go together. That's why they're so focused on the vaccine, because the vaccine gives them the justification, a vaccine campaign. If that's the only thing that can stop this imaginary pandemic is a vaccination campaign, that's the only thing that gives them the ability to go to a global ID and global surveillance state. And this is why they're going to continue to go to 100%. And this is why if we lose this fight, they're going to put us in prisons, because it's all about their surveillance. And I say the same thing about the electric cars. They tell you that this is about getting rid of carbon dioxide. It's not about that. Toyota came up with an electric car that runs off of hydrogen fuel. You can put it in a tank. It's actually faster to recharge it than it is, you know, with a tank than it is many, many times. It's only slightly slower than filling up with gas. It doesn't take hours and hours at a station. It doesn't require a massive new investment in infrastructure to do it. But they want you to get fueled off of the electric power grid, because that gives them an excuse to track you. They could tax the hydrogen fuel at the source. But if you're going to get it, if you're going to plug in anywhere and get a charge, that means that they've got to track the number of miles that you drive, which means then they can track how you drive and so forth. And so in the same way that they don't want to have any therapeutics, they've got to have the vaccines, because the vaccines give them an excuse for tracking, for identification. They also need to have only the battery chargeable cars, because that gives them an excuse to do that as well. So all of this stuff, global warming, global cooling, the pandemic, it's all designed to create a panopticon surveillance state. The Swiss electorate has now put the brakes on climate policy. In the referendum of May 2017, the revised Energy Act had been approved by a clear majority, but 4 years later, a tight no to the revised CO2 law followed. And so they've had enough there. They've got, they're not making all the right decisions, but they seem to be a little bit more in tune to what is happening than most people are. WND story, new energy reality means that solar and wind cannot do the job. As a matter of fact, I've been on this particular issue for about 15 years. Renewable energy mandates and how they were not going to be reliable to power the grid. And, of course, that's the other part of this. They don't want us to have power. And at the same time, they're destroying the power generation, as I've mentioned many times before. They're killing the input into the grid. At the same time, that they're proposing to put an unprecedented burden on the grid with these battery-operated cars. They all have to be charged off of the grid. This is a distribution issue. This is a central planning issue, boneheaded central planning. What they're doing in terms of banning all other forms of locomotion and engines and so forth and saying only people who are going to charge, they don't want to have, again, an electric car that runs on hydrogen. They want to make sure that you do it off the grid as they are pulling the wheels off of the grid, essentially, because they want to lock us down. Let's take a quick look at New World Orders on this 11th of October, 2021. We had, as Gerald Celente pointed out on Friday, we talked about the jobs figures that just broke on Friday morning. And to give you an idea of how bad this is, it was down 40% from the previous month. It was down 61% from what they had predicted. That predicted it was going to go up. And this is noteworthy because their job statistics are always cooked. They've always manipulated the stats of jobs, just like they manipulate the stats of inflation, just like they've manipulated the stats of flu cases and coronavirus cases. This is one of these lies, damn lies, and statistics that we're talking about here. And usually what they will do is they always want to make this quarter look really good compared to previous quarters. So usually what they'll do is always revise the previous quarter, and they'll revise the numbers down in order to make the trend look good going up. Well, they couldn't hide it. Couldn't hide it. So we're down 40% from the previous month in actuality, but they had said, well, it's going to be up, but we're down 60% from what they'd predicted. They'd predicted there was going to be 500,000 jobs. It was only 194,000 jobs created in September, and that was down from 366,000 jobs added in August. Now, the Wall Street Journal says this is the slowest pace of the year, and they attribute it to the Delta variant and a persistent shortage of workers. Well, they don't mention the mandate, do they? They don't mention Biden dictating that people be fired en masse. And again, that's really going to hit in this next one for October, because that's when a lot of this stuff is kicking in, these companies that are going with his bluff mandate. It is a bluff. But still, I think that there was some effect with this, because his bluff came out the first week of September, and some companies already started firing people right away with that. So I think some of that is reflected in it, but I think we're going to see even more in this next month. But when you look at it from the standpoint of people going into the labor market, why take a job with a company that's going to fire you if you don't take this shot, the next shot, shot after that, and every other thing that they demand? That is a bad precedent. And as I've said to many people, just be thankful for the fact that, as I said before from Doug Wilson, earthquakes will reveal fault lines, and you don't want to be working for companies like that. But as Rabobank points out, just wait until we see the impact of forced vaccine mandate layoffs on the labor force. The energy crisis continues in India and China, both of them with flagging blackouts, as I just reported. And now we're going to be going into that. We got Bill Maurer saying, how are we going to build back better? That's the slogan of the globalists. That's the slogan of Biden. How are we going to build back better if we don't have any workers and we got no supplies? He didn't throw in the energy grid, right? So we got no energy. We got no supplies. We've got no workers. You have completely thrown a monkey wrench into the system that you didn't build. That's why I talked when all this stuff began with Trump. I spent a great deal of time talking about the Leonard Reed essay, I, Pencil, talking about how the production of pencils, very complicated if you stop and think about all the different components in there and how they all have to get to market and how there wasn't a central planner that was sitting there. You didn't have a department of pencils in Washington. determining how many were going to be made, how they were going to be made, grabbing all of the supplies everywhere. It was something that was organically put together. It was a great essay done in the middle of the 20th century talking about the power of the free market, what Adam Smith called the invisible hand. Do we know what has happened with this? Well, you know, what we have beginning last year with the Trump lockdown, with the central stuff and everything, what we had was the invisible monkey wrench, invisible to most people, that was thrown into the, or as they say in the UK, spanner, right? Invisible spanner thrown into the machine. So on Friday, Bill Maher says, well, I keep reading about the Build Back Better bill, but we don't have enough workers, even if we passed it tomorrow. And because of all these supply chain problems, we don't have building supplies. So how are we going to build back better if we have no workers and no supplies? And if we have no energy? As Gerald Slinty was pointing out, empty Manhattan storefronts are double the historical rate. We were talking about real estate on Friday. You know, he was saying, well, yeah, residential is not doing too bad at the moment. But commercial real estate, especially in Manhattan, is ground zero. With every passing day, one individual who is a president of the Midtown Partnership, East Midtown Partnership, told Bloomberg, with every passing day, our retail and dining sectors suffer, resulting in more vacant storefronts and lost jobs. I honestly don't know how these people hung on this long. With all of the lockdowns and the prohibitions and the mandates, I mean, it is just a testament to the dogged determination of these entrepreneurs. They would, as they were being shut down inside, and say, well, all right, we'll set up a sidewalk cafe, and it's cold in New York, and so we'll put out heaters, and we'll do all this stuff, and they won't let us do this without masks on, so we'll put the mask on. They've just continually adapted, but you can only do that for so long. You have to be able to make a profit. They show only 29% of workers are back at their desks in late September. So no matter how hard you work, if 70% of the people are gone, you can't survive on that. These people don't have 4,000% profit margins like Merck. They survive on a 20 or 30% margin or less. Lumber prices have gone up 50% since August, and they may climb higher. Lumber futures as of October the 8th were hovering around $713 per thousand board feet. Well, what does that compare to? It's 58% lower than the record high of $1,711 in May. So it's 58% higher than that record in May, but it is still considerably higher than a year ago. A year ago, it was $586, and now it is $713 per thousand board feet. After prices bottomed out below $400 per thousand board feet in late August, they have since recovered by $100 per thousand board feet in just over a month. Think about the volatility involved here, right? A year ago, you know, it was $586. Then in May, it goes up to $1,700. Then it drops 3 months later to $400. And then it goes up, you know, by more than 100 in just 1 month. It goes up to 700. I mean, how does anybody who's a builder work through this kind of fluctuation? This is a precursor, folks, to the kind of disruptive hyperinflation that we're going to be seeing. That's why when I saw that $1 trillion coin, I thought, yeah, that's perfect. Venezuela, right there. Not being able to, this is the kind of thing that wreaks havoc on a society, this kind of radical fluctuation in prices. Even though housing and rentals are booming, the slow return of workers back to the office buildings has been detrimental for the retail businesses in New York. And they have, people are talking about how there's not going to be any toys for Christmas. Let me tell you, that's our least worry, especially the young kids. You can entertain them a lot of things. And if you got older teenagers, maybe the best thing that could happen is they can't get a video game. Supply chain crunch. There will definitely be weeping children this holiday season. Yeah, we will have a sanitized Christmas instead of a Santa Christmas, right? They sanitize our society and sanitize all the different goods that are produced there. In Australia, we have a 16-year veteran of the Australian police, a sergeant, who quits in protests of Dictator Dan Andrade, his COVID orders. She claims majority of cops agree with her. She did the interview in her uniform as she was quitting. She is a senior sergeant. She was interviewed by a group called Discernible, wearing her full uniform during the interview, announcing that she was officially resigning from the force at the end of her interview. She said, I think the reason, or the issue, and why perhaps police are feeling more emboldened to act the way that they are in relation to these harsher actions is because of the messaging that comes from Dan Andrews, who tells law enforcement to do what to do on, she said, quote, a daily basis. She stated, however, that the individual police members who use excessive force will be held accountable, and that police do have a responsibility not to use excessive force, something that is allegedly grilled into them at the academy. And again, you know, when we look at some of the issues that have been happening here and the transformation of police work in the United States, a lot of that was coming out of Washington. Washington was where they were changing the way the police would engage with people and telling them, you know, to, as one guy who taught at the police academy in Arizona for decades said, they changed the way that we're teaching this. This is coming from Washington, and they're teaching a shoot-first approach to this. She served 6 years at Professional Standards Command, so this would be kind of like internal affairs, what we would call it here in the U.S. They're responsible for investigating police misconduct, corruption, discrimination, freedom of information about investigations. She reminded her colleagues that ultimately they will be held responsible individually for their actions, and they're still subject to Section 462A of the Crimes Act of 1958, which forbids the disproportionate use of force. You know, as we talk about the violations of our individual liberties, the removal of informed consent, the experimentation on all of us that's been done by this this vaccine program, and we talk about the Nuremberg Code. And I would just say to these people, you know, you are being told now by Dictator Dan, or you're being implied by Fauci or some of these other people, that you're just taking orders, you're following them along. But as you pointed out, you'll be held individually responsible. And we saw what happened with the Nuremberg trials, didn't we? You remember Operation Paperclip? So if you look at Operation Paperclip in conjunction with the Nuremberg trials, what does that tell you? Tells you that the lower level people, and we just had some guy who's in his 90s or something, who's a lower level prison guard, and they've grabbed him and they're putting him on trial and so forth. The lower level people who's like, I'm just at the bottom, I'm just following orders, those are the people, for the most part, who paid the price. Yeah, they had a few people at the top that they, you know, used as a show trial. Most of the people who are at the top, they brought them over for Operation Paperclip. If they were people who knew something, who had skills that they could use, they were given a pass. But the people who were just enforcers for this stuff, they paid the price for the most part. They went to prison or so forth. So just keep that in mind, you know, when you hear people saying, yeah, I'm just following orders. I know nothing. Colonel Schultz, or whatever his name was. She reminds her colleagues they'll be held individually responsible. Acting Senior Sergeant Mitchell cited ethical conflicts as a reason for speaking publicly about the conduct of Victoria police officers and their Chief Commissioner Shane Patton, their Minister Lisa Neville, MP, and ultimately the Premier Dan Andrews, MP. So this is one of the things I think with Fauci. I mean, the guy is old, and I think he really is thinking that, you know, he is so rich and so powerful, there'll never be any accounting held for him, but he's also old. But then on the other hand, a lot of these people think that they're going to live forever. They really do. You know, Francis Collins, somebody wrote me a letter and said, so is Francis Collins resigning a distraction? I think he was an embarrassment to them. You know, he didn't handle this stuff correctly. He made some faux pas that was, yeah, we've got to caution parents to wear masks around their kids at home and stuff like that, and he had to retract that. He wasn't as slick a politician as Fauci. But make no mistake about it, the man is a transhumanist. He is eugenicist. Don't get fooled by his Christian labels that he puts on himself. I know this guy from way back because he and Ken Ham at Answers in Genesis locked horns over a curriculum that Francis Collins was supporting. I don't remember exactly what his involvement was. I think he was involved with a company or something called BioLogos. BioLogos put teaching evolution as the preeminent thing, reinterpreted the Bible in terms of their understanding of evolution and science, and he and Ken Ham locked horns. So I've known about Francis Collins for a long time, and I've known about his transhumanism, and other things have now come to light even more in the last few years. But he's something of an embarrassment to them, and you know, they can always whitewash this by, you know, doing a rinse and repeat, kind of what they did in Australia with Gladys Berejiklian. You know, just take her out and bring in another guy, and this guy, oh, he's supposed to be better. It turns out, you know, it's more the same. Australian police interrogate a citizen on his doorstep over a six-month-old anti-lockdown Facebook post. Now, there's a video on this, but I didn't put it on. But basically what they did, they knock on the door. Have you gone to any protest in the past? He says, no, I'm not going to answer that. You guys wouldn't be here otherwise, said the man. I'd like to know how you got this address, actually. And so this is something you easily find on social media if you want to see the interaction. But the police actually pull out a file and show a printed screenshot of a social media post that he had 6 months ago on Facebook. Do you agree that you put some posts on Facebook? Does this look familiar? And he goes, yeah. He says, then they say, well, were you there? The incredulous suspect, as Zero Hedge puts it, breaks out in laughter at the absurdity of police showing up at his door to ask whether he attended a protest 6 months prior. He expressed outrage that protesting as a free Australian citizen would be deemed somehow against the law. He said, you guys are losers. This is sad. He says, where are we going in life that you would do this type of thing? And I said, well, were you at this protest 6 months ago? And he goes, well, who gives an F? How illegal is that? Going to a protest, he said? He said, Black Lives Matter protests were 2 weeks before that. Was that illegal? Are you knocking on their door? Yeah. No, they won't be. And then we saw over the weekend, armed French police boarded a London-bound train after a Brit was suspected of wearing, quote, the wrong type of mask. The wrong type of mask. Yeah, we're going back to Wallace and Gromit again. You got the wrong trousers, mate. Now you got the wrong mask. Got the wrong face diaper. He says it was nothing other than an officious staff member who had it in for him and reported him. But he was surrounded, a guy in his 40s, he was surrounded by at least eight uniformed police officers. I will show you the video, but it's basically just guys standing around. He says, I have absolutely no idea what this is all about, except that a staff member has taken a very strong dislike to me and accused me of not wearing the right type of mask. See, this is the kind of Stasi society they want us to exist in. And this is the type of thing that has been happening at the airports. And, you know, with people who work in the airline industry, they've got that power and they start using it on people. But it really comes out of this whole mentality that goes back to East Germany. I've told the story before of a woman, an American woman, who loved communism. She loved it so much that she went to study in East Germany and she wanted to stay and she married an East German. Because she was an American, the Stasi didn't believe that she was a genuine true believer in Marxism, and so they kept an eye on her. And as the Stasi files were released a few years after the takedown of the Berlin Wall and the East German government collapsed, people started to realize that neighbors were spying on neighbors to a great extent. And she said, I looked at that and I was absolutely appalled to find out all these people that I thought were friends were informing on me all the time. But she still loved communism. She still loved the authoritarian. She could not get out. As a matter of fact, I tried to arrange an interview with her, but she was still too hardcore communist to come on and talk to me. She had not learned her lesson. But one thing that she did say in an interview that she gave to a left-wing magazine, she said, the strangest thing was you would meet these people in ordinary situations, and they would be really, really nice. Then she subsequently found out that they were spying on her. But she said they'd be really, really nice until you went to the butcher shop where they worked, and everybody is lined up for the rationed meat. And then they get really, really officious because they've been kicked all this time, and now they got a little bit of power, and they're anxious to kick somebody else. So he says, I have absolutely no idea why this is happening. It's just a staff member who didn't like it. And then when they asked the train company, Eurostar, they said, well, he wasn't arrested. He was just refused to travel. They left him abandoned. He says, I don't know how I'm going to get home now, right? So as we look at this, I'm going to talk a little bit about the toxic jabs when we come back, because there's new information coming out about the toxic jabs and a horrific story. A horrific story about some young children who were given the COVID jab that they're about to authorize for all the kids down to 5 years old. And what happened to them? Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Hear news now at APSRadioNews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
All right, before we get back into the news, I want to talk a little bit more about some other correspondence, emails, and letters that I've received from people. This is very important. This is in the Southern California area. This is exactly what I've been talking about. I think it's very important. This is County Patriots, SB County Patriots, San Bernardino County in California. They said, take back our country one county at a time. This is exactly what I believe is the best approach. There's a lot of different things that we can do, but I think this is imperative to do it from this. I think this is the most important thing. Who we are everyday citizens who are fed up with career politicians and the corruption within the system. The organization is made up of we the people, a people who value our constitutional republic with liberty and justice for all. SB, that's San Bernardino, California, County Patriots, SB County Patriots, is an action-based organization established to take back our county and ultimately our country. We're God-loving, flag-loving, constitutional patriots taking a stand against tyranny. Our mission is to give power back to the people. Organizing in large numbers is extremely powerful. It's time for patriots to band together and rise up. We invite all conservative-minded groups to partner with us to effect change. No party affiliation required. And again, you can find them at SB County Patriots. At protonmail.com. So even if you're not in that county, if you're in California, you might want to meet them and see what they've got going, get some ideas for how you can organize things in your own county. So that's SB County Patriots at protonmail.com. And they've got some volunteer meetings that are scheduled coming up at various places there. I'm not going to go through and read all of these. If you're in the area, contact them and they can send you this flyer. So they said, well, we've had a couple hundred that are meeting every Tuesday night to coordinate attendance at the various school board meetings. multiple school districts and with the County Board of Supervisors to push back against any and all of these mandates. So that's good. I think we need to be careful in terms of, you know, the school board thing now. It's good to, I don't think we ought to give any of this tyranny a pass, but just understand, as they've now indicated, that they are going to shut down your speech. They're going to get more authoritarian, use more force with that. I think one of the key things to do, and I've said it before, perhaps having meetings where you have speakers, where you get together, just get to know each other, but you can have some speakers. It'll be the center point of all of this. And mainly, you're trying to get together and share ideas. You can videotape those things. You can send them to the elected leaders who don't want you speaking at the school board anyway. And that way, you wind up not having giving them an opportunity to portray you as somebody who is a threat or to use force against you. That's just my idea. But I'm not saying don't do any of this stuff. And I think it's great to get together with us. And I really do appreciate the information and the support. Again, sbcountypatriots@protonmail.com. And they can help you with that. We need to try everything that we can. This needs to be all hands on deck. There's a lot of us. We can have a lot of different ways and approaches that we do this stuff and find out what works. This is from another listener, David, who writes, he says, I'm reaching out not knowing if you're aware, but the story today about the Biden executive order is touching this story. He says, I work for a food processing facility in Buffalo, New York. We specialize in aseptic packaging of liquid edibles, in other words, drink bottles. We package milk, protein drinks, and broths. We had to mask up from July 2020 until April 2021, and then they allowed vaccinated employees to ditch the masks. Now we have the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, in our building a few days a week for our beef broth packaging. Starting August the 24th, the USDA issued warnings to my employer that if we wished to keep the broth we produce USDA certified, then all 650 employees at work had to mask up regardless of vax status, or they would revoke our USDA certification, put them out of business. He says this is something that's being done nationwide in all states. Every factory that has USDA certification is forcing their employees back into the masks. So, this is what they're going to do, regardless of vaccine status. You're going to have to wear the mask. And this is the kind of pressure that's put on by the federal government. You know, they can take away your privilege license, essentially, because this is like a national privilege license to the USDA. They were able to operate for several months without that. We didn't seem to have a massive outbreak of anything that's killing everybody. There is no justification for any of this stuff. They're just using this as a prevarication to get exactly what they wanted, which is total control of every aspect of our life, to micromanage everything that we do, to lock down the economy. This is from another listener, Jeff. He says, I wanted to share this with you, trying to get ivermectin. He said, I tried two different ways. I went to America's Frontline Doctors. It's a very easy process to fill out. The application took about 15 minutes. It's a $90 consultation fee. I waited a week, and then they canceled the application due to high demand and requested that I resubmit to get back in line. No fee was charged since I never received a consultation. This did work for my best friend back in North Carolina. He was able to do that, and as I said, he was getting very sick all last year. I knew nobody that got sick. And now I've known several people that have gotten sick after this mass vaccine campaigns have started. And these are not people who got vaccinated either. So I've seen this happening, ramping up. Never saw that last year. He got the ivermectin, and I gave the story that when he got it and took it, he said it just made a tremendous difference immediately. He said he could feel like this burning sensation. But as he pointed out, he wanted me to make it clear that he gives God the glory for the things that he provides, and he did provide the basis for him to be able to get that, even though there's so much demand, they're having trouble meeting that. Merck has taken this kind of stuff off the market. They're trying to keep people from getting ivermectin because, again, they want the money. That's why they came up with this patented thing. He said, here's attempt number two. Went to pushhealth.com, and I've talked about that as well before. I gave that to you from another listener. He says, very similar process to filling out the application with America's Frontline Doctors. Very easy process. He said, I live in Pennsylvania. They charge a $65 consultation fee. Within 1 hour, I received a message from a doctor. I had to call my local pharmacy and insure them to ensure that they had ivermectin in stock. I had a prescription within about 5 hours of starting the application process. Insurance did not cover the prescription. Total cost of the prescription was $90, but CVS I went to got me a discount coupon, and it was only $35. So my out-of-pocket total cost was $100 for 20 pills, 3 milligrams each. So just wanted to share that with everybody. Appreciate that, Jeff, for sending that along. You know, people need to know how they can handle that. Let's talk a little bit about the toxic jabs. Because, as I mentioned before, Merck came out with their thing. They said, oh, yeah, we did this for 30 days. It looks so good. It's so safe and so effective that we just stopped the trial and we gave it to the control group. That's not a test. 30 days, you don't know anything about the safety and the efficacy of this. Just like these vaccines, if you're going to go out and give it to everybody on Earth, like Fauci was demanding, I've played that clip and I'm every day, and I'm going to keep playing that clip every day. Just to get you, I want you to memorize this so you can recite it to people. You know, this whole thing about, well, we got to blow the system up. We don't want to take 10 years to do this. We got to do this from the inside. We've got to be disruptive. We've got to be iterative on a gradual process and so forth. That was October 2019. This is all this stuff was about to roll out. So when you look at all of that and you look at what Merck is doing, you know, shutting down this, now they are demanding that the FDA give them emergency approval for this thing that they've not tested. If you roll this thing out to everybody, just as that guy was saying, so how do we get to this situation where we just tell everybody, hey, we want everybody in the world to take this vaccine that we haven't tested? I mean, that was October 2019. You know, this stuff started breaking 2 months later. How do we get everybody in the world to just take this vaccine that we haven't tested? Well, you know, how do we get everybody to take this other drug that we haven't tested? So now what Merck is doing is they're testing the water to see if they can get this through with a therapeutic, because, you know, there's another process for therapeutics. They have a three phases of testing. And prior to that, they have animal testing. That's why it takes so many years to do it. If you give it to everybody, you have skipped the testing. You have a large short-term, you know, if you have a short-term test, that's not a long-term test. And if you give it to everybody, that's not a that's no substitute for a long-term test. A lot of these things take a while to show up, and they're going to take a while to show up in the general population. You have these tests because if you have the kinds of things that we've already seen happening with this rollout of the vaccines, you would stop the test. If there was any ethics, if there was any integrity left in these regulatory agencies, they would have stopped the test based on what we've seen reported in the VAERS database, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System run by the CDC. So Merck is asking the FDA for emergency approval of the new COVID drug despite safety concerns. What are the safety concerns? The same concerns you'd have with any drug. You know, it could cause cancer. It could cause birth defects. I remember for the longest time that the FDA would justify waiting 10 years for some kind of a cancer treatment, saying, well, you know, look at what happened with thalidomide babies in the UK. You know, they were giving this drug, thalidomide, I forget what it was supposed to treat people for, but they were having kids that were born with, instead of arms, they had like little flippers that, you know, it stunted the growth of their arms somehow, and all these other things. It was horrific. And I said, see, we saved you from that, because we ran this thing out for a period of time and did due diligence, did testing on this drug. Now they've thrown that away. And what we've got now, frankly, is much worse than thalidomide babies. You know, we've killed a couple of thousand babies, unborn babies. We've got a massive death toll. I'll get to that in a moment. But a 4- and 5-year-old child were given Pfizer COVID shots accidentally at a Walgreens instead of flu shots. Both of them have now developed heart issues. And I said before, you know, they have to ramp up all of the panic about young children and the effects of COVID, which are zero, zero, even if you go with their padded numbers. And Marty McCleary at Johns Hopkins University debunked all of that and said, well, you know, when it was just under 400, they said we investigated every single one of those. And there wasn't one child that we could say died of COVID. They had multiple comorbidities. Many of them didn't even have any respiratory issues. They died of other things, but they had a positive PCR test. And even if it was 400 or 500 kids, that's still statistically zero. And that is still less of a risk than is involved with these experimental vaccines. So this Indiana family goes to Walgreens for flu shots. Why? This is exposed a long time ago. And this is why I know what this was all about, because this is not my first rodeo. I've been talking about what Fauci and the CDC have been doing with flu shots year after year, how they would pad the numbers, how they would tell people, take the shot or take the test and send it to us. And they say, don't send us that. We don't have enough capacity to do these tests. If it looks like the flu, call it the flu and we'll add it to our statistics so we can pressure people to go get the flu shot, which probably doesn't have anything to do with the strain of flu that's happening, that's going around this year. So this family goes to Walgreens to get flu shots for their very young children, 4 and 5 years old. The medical professionals, quote unquote, at Walgreens, because that's, you know, where I get all my health care, is at Walgreens and Walmart, right? You too, right? For the longest time, I've talked, when I would cover this flu shot stuff, I would say, are you kidding me? Look at this. They're, you know, you can basically go get a flu shot while you're filling up the, you know, the tank on your car, getting gas. What? Seeing everybody and their uncle selling these flu shots. I'm not going to walk into a retail spot and let these people start giving me medical treatment. I mean, you know, seriously, if they don't, if they're not trained, you know, just a simple shot of anything, they do it the wrong way, that can cause issues. So anyway, so they go to this Walgreens to get the flu shot for their 4 and 5 year old. And they were given, accidentally given, doses of the Pfizer corona vaccine. They were given adult doses of the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine, which is basically what they're giving teenagers too, right? What, when they went down to, you know, the 15-year-olds or whatever the latest thing was, they're still giving them the same dosage that they give adults. As they're going to go down to the, you know, 5 to 11-year-olds, they're going to cut the dosage by a third for them. I talked about this many times when I talked about fluoridation of water. I said, regardless of what you think about fluoridation of water and the effects of excessive fluoride on IQ, which has been well documented by Harvard and other people, regardless of what you think about this particular type of fluoride that's put in the water, and if it's to protect your teeth, why would you ingest it, and on, or, you know, take a look at the toothpaste, and it warns you about, don't swallow the toothpaste, it's got fluoride in it. If you do, call the poison center. Forget all of that. Let's say that swallowing fluoride is a good thing, that the fluoride, which is produced as a waste product from the aluminum and nuclear industries, is a good form of fluoride, and it's good to for your teeth, and it's good to swallow. Let's give them that argument. But if you were to do something, even if it was 100% safe and 100% effective, why would you put it in the water to mass medicate everybody? Because you can't control the doses. And I've said this many times. I said the fundamental issue about fluoridation of water is the medication through the water supply. Because the difference between medicine and poison is dosage, right? You give somebody too much of something, even if it's safe and effective, you can kill them. You can kill people with too much water. We've seen that happen with some gag stunts that were done in radio stations where, you know, they would make people drink water and they wouldn't let them go to the bathroom. They had a woman who died from drinking so much water. So, it's all about the dosage. And I said, so if you're dosing, if you're putting the fluoride that is supposedly safe and effective, 100% safe, 100% effective, you're putting it in the water, how do you determine how much everybody's getting? You're giving, even if it is uniformly distributed, you're giving the same dosage to a young child that you're giving to an adult male. Does that make any sense? And do you think that it's uniformly distributed? And so here we have a situation where they reduce the dosage of the Pfizer vaccines by a third of what they give the adults. But they gave a full adult dose to this 4- and 5-year-old. And, you know, we've had problems with this in the past because they send this stuff out. And at first they were saying it was 5 doses in a vial. Then they said it was 6. It's a very complicated process. I talked about this with the documents that came out last August, sent out by the CDC. They sent it out first to 3 states and a city. And they said, here's what we want you to collect. And here is the procedure for what you're going to have to do with these vaccines. They're going to be sent to you in a frozen state. So you're going to have to thaw them, and you're going to have to dilute them, and you're going to have to use them within a certain period of time. I said, can you believe this? I mean, what could possibly go wrong with this, right? Everything. But then also focus on the fact that they wanted every kind of personal information from you under the guise that they would have to have you come back within 30 days and get exactly the same kind of vaccine. So if you got a Moderna, you have to get another Moderna in 30 days. If you got a Pfizer, you got to get another Pfizer in 30 days. So under the guise of having to come back for dose number 2, they got all your personal information. But the real kicker was that they had a field there for refused. I said, now why do they have to have that? Yeah, they say, well, we got to get all your personal information because we got to make sure you come back for the 30-day shot. What if I refuse? Why do you need to know that? You're putting me in your database because I'm unvaccinated. So going back to this, you know, we've had situations where people have been given the undiluted thing. They were given 6 times the dosage. They were sick. They got sick because they didn't dilute it properly. Some people were given saline injections, they said, where they just gave them the saline instead of any of the other stuff. And so now we have these children who were given triple the dosage that they should have been given. They said the children have been taken, the lawyer said the children had been taken to a pediatric cardiologist, and the family was told both of them were showing signs of heart issues because they got sick right away, heart issues right away. The younger child has been sick with a fever and a cough, and now the older child has also developed a fever. They have identified, they said, the cardiologist said our daughter was having higher blood pressure than she would like, and Lucas, our son, was having tachycardia. That means irregular heartbeat, like a tachometer, right? It's racing and slowing down and racing and slowing down. This is just horrific. CBS, on a poll released on Friday, found that 37% of parents, this is a story from Information Liberation, by the way, 37% of parents with kids aged 5 to 11 said they plan to get their kids jabbed. A Kaiser poll had the same number pegged at 37%. So two different polls show that slightly more than a third of the parents are willing to jab their young kids with an untested vaccine that has a very, very bad track record so far. The worst we've seen, by far. I'll get into those numbers in a second. The numbers were shockingly high considering, as Information Liberation points out, considering that there's zero long-term data on the side effects profile of these novel mRNA jabs in kids or even in adults. And plenty of data showing their supposed effectiveness wanes after just 5 months. And people may require a lifetime of jabs in order to be fully vaccinated. And you can add to that the fact that these kids are at no risk. So why take this risk? Why do this to very young kids when they're going to have to get another one in 6 months and another one after that? Last year, the Department of Health and Human Services, that was Alex Azar, the Eli Lilly CEO that Trump put in charge of HHS, that HHS used emergency powers due to the pandemic, and the directive allows pharmacists in all 50 states to give vaccines like flu shots to children 3 years old and older. And they show the vaccine record cards here. I can see why people are forging these things. They look pretty crude. Meanwhile, Gavin Newsom has a daughter who's 12. And she has not been implemented. She's not been vaccinated while he is implementing sweeping mandates, according to Yahoo News, pointing out his hypocrisy here. She just turned 12. She's not vaccinated, but he's going to make sure all the other kids are. Just like he would tell everybody that you can't dine indoors, but in November 2020, he and lobbyists without masks were doing that. His son at summer camp this last summer, photos emerged showing the children playing basketball indoors without any masks while he was prohibiting that for everybody else. So, yeah. I've got rules for thee, but not for me, not for my own either. Meanwhile, we have in the UK, we have councils that are running vaccination webinars. They're propaganda sessions in an effort to get consent from parents to jab their children. They said guy Jeff Barron, who is General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders, said, quote, "There is increasing frustration among school leaders about delays to the rollout of COVID vaccines for the 12 to 15-year-olds. We're at a loss to understand why the government has not placed more of a focus on ensuring that this happens as quickly as possible." We've got to get the numbers up, right? These kids have absolutely... This is the classic example of subjecting the individual to the mass delusions of crowds and governments. To say that we've got to have some arbitrary number that we're going to achieve, and so we've got to throw you into the hopper here, even though you have no risk from the disease, and you do have a risk from the vaccine, we're going to throw you into this. And we're going to deny parental input into all this. And they've talked about how they're going to do that in the UK, and so that was one of the questions that the parents had. They were very concerned about that. They said, well, what if we don't give you our consent? Will that still be respected? Oh, yes, of course. Well, no, we've seen exactly the opposite, said by them. Said, we're going to push this out for mature minors, and we're going to run these vaccine clinics, and we're going to tell the kids, if you get this shot is your ticket to life. Without it, everything at school will be closed down to you. All opportunities will be closed down to you. You want to take the shot? Oh, yeah, sure. They don't understand the risks, and they don't want to talk to the parents. But they are trying to make sure they don't have a rebellion. And so they're running these webinars. Parents across the country are being invited to webinars to put concerns to clinicians and to vaccine professionals. Oh, did you realize that there's a profession, a vaccine profession? We're not talking about phlebotomists here. We're talking about people who are professional pharmaceutical shills. That's what they're talking about here. Anyway, the health officials were quizzed about whether or not the children who have already had COVID and have natural immunity should still be jabbed. Why the UK has embarked on vaccinations for children when other countries have not. And then, of course, myocarditis, inflammation of the heart, and the possible changes to girls' menstruation cycles were also discussed. And the families raised fears that their refusal to give consent would not be respected. Oh, that's a given. Health officials reassured families that only pupils with explicit parental consent would receive the jab, and they would be lying. I can guarantee you they're lying. That's from the Daily Skeptic, by the way. I saw this article on WND, and I was attracted by the by the title, and then repulsed by the title. The title begins, Operation Warped Screed. Oh, that's the perfect way to describe this. Operation Warped Screed. A screed is a long, monotonous speech. And we have received a long, monotonous speech from Trump for the last 575 days. Operation Warped Screed. But then I didn't like the last part of it. Trump's forced surrender to pharma. Did you realize that he was forced to surrender? I didn't realize that he was forced to surrender. This is a story that's written by a pastor. His name is Scott Lively. He wrote this op-ed piece for WND. And he says, by continuing to describe his COVID vaccine rollout, and he puts vaccine in quotes, he said, Operation Warp Speed as an unqualified success. Instead of updating his messaging to distance himself from Big Pharma, now obvious greed, lies, and cover-ups, President Trump is unintentionally helping his and our worst enemies, big media, push their own Operation Warped Screed. the liberty-destroying, false COVID narrative that big government and big tech are using to justify tyranny. Now, think about this. Think about the cognitive dissonance that is involved in somebody who sees that it's about greed, it's about lies, it's about cover-up, it's about big media collaborating with big pharmaceutical companies, that it is a liberty-destroying narrative. He even offers at his church, at the end of this article, he has a church that will offer religious exemption letters to Christian believers about the vaccine mandates and how you can get that. So he gets all of that. But what he doesn't get is the connection with Trump. Right? That's the cognitive dissonance here. This is why I continue to talk about Trump. That and the fact that Trump is still distracting people from focusing on all of these issues. Most of the people who are cheering for Trump are basically drawn into the idea that we can have our problems fixed in Washington, that they can be fixed in the Oval Office, that if we get the right guy in office, that that's going to do it for us. Now, even if you believe that Trump was genuine, and even if you believe that he is, was the guy, the last 4 years would show, as this guy has kind of said, a forced surrender. I've said for the longest time that I was not optimistic that even if Trump had stayed the same as candidate Trump, even if he had focused on those issues, I wasn't optimistic that he was going to be able to do anything. I was hoping that when he got there, that he would blow things up in kind of a Julian Assange way, that he would expose what was there. That would have been the best possible outcome. Because the problem is that there's so much power in Washington and so much inertia in that massive, gargantuan bureaucracy that you can't just turn it around. I mean, it's like the Titanic. You know, you're in the Titanic and you look out there and you see the iceberg and you go, oh, we got an iceberg. Turn the ship. I can't turn it that quickly because it's too big. Right? So you hit the iceberg anyway. That's where we are right now. That's why, one of the reasons why you want to do this at the local level. But see, the problem is, what Scott Lively is doing, and the reason I talk about this, is that people project onto their political idols, it is idolatry, they project onto their political idols what they want them to be. And this whole article is a projection, just such a projection as that. I remember when Harry Belafonte, the singer, very liberal, and he's a big supporter of Barack Obama. And towards the end of the 8 years of Barack Obama, he just gave up and just exacerbated about what did not happen with Barack Obama. And he said, we projected what we wanted him to be, right? We projected that onto him. That wasn't what he was. And people need to realize that's not what Trump is, and we need to stop focusing on that. And yet, in Iowa, he had 20,000 people show up. And what did Trump say about the vaccine?
Meanwhile, the media says nothing about Biden's handling of COVID, despite all of the vaccines that we came up with, therapeutics that we came up, and knowledge that we gave Biden's come up with this horrible period of time, he hasn't done the job. Because now we have more people that have died of COVID in 2021 with the vaccines, with the therapeutics. More people died in 2021 than in all of 2020. But the media is silent. They don't talk about that. They hate to talk about that.
So what he's complaining about is the fact that the media is not playing the same game that they played against him. And he's playing that same game against Biden. Look at his death count. Look at all of this stuff. And they're not joining along with it. Why? It's not because he's a good guy and they're bad guys. They're bad guys and he's not a good guy. He's simply somebody that they don't like, that they're competing against. And that's why they're not joining in on this. But when you look at what Scott is saying, he says, he was not immune to political extortion. Nobody has ever had the kind of opposition that he's had. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. Nevertheless, is he going to be able to save us since he couldn't do anything in the first 4 years? Trump agreed to a transparently illegal military strike in Syria, justified by the neocons' favorite pretext of chemical weapons. Yeah, exactly. Been used over and over again. So he didn't see that coming. You saw it coming. You know it wasn't justified. How did Trump miss this? Is he an idiot? He was pushed into this by Jared and Ivanka. Not the deep state. Not even the surveillance state. He was pushed into it by Jared and Ivanka. I believe his far too liberal positions on gay issues, said the pastor, have been to appease conflicted conservatives. No, Trump is very comfortable with that. As a matter of fact, Melania bragged about the fact that he was the first president to come in supporting gay marriage and that he had done more than anybody prior to him to support the LGBT agenda, that he had appointed openly homosexual people to this. He's embraced homosexual marriage and all the rest. He's embraced the LGBT thing. Don't try to project your values onto him. Look at the values that he expresses. As a pastor, you should understand that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the heart, you will show what you are. By the fruit that you bear, as a pastor, you should have that kind of discernment. Scott, I mean, it's just amazing to me to excuse all of this stuff. I mean, we look at Trump. I've said many times, one of the biggest issues about the LGBT movement is the fact that they're proud of their sin. Aggressively proud of their sin. I said, you know, you don't typically have people who are proud of their adultery, right? Except for Trump. He really set a new standard of being proud of your sin for heterosexual sin. You know, I've never seen anybody publicly throw their wife that he has betrayed and cheated on, throw her under the bus. I mean, they did a movie about it, The First Wives Club. So you think somebody like that can be relied on to follow their campaign promises, their oath to the Constitution, when they can't follow their oath to their own wife, the mother of his children? So he said, the most consequential of his capitulations to the globalist extortion was Operation Warp Speed, the super fast tracking of the experimental messenger RNA drugs. Well, you know all that. And he said the globalists maneuvered the president into this. No, he cheered this from the very beginning. He made that Faucian bargain with the devil. He made that before the first show meeting that he had, where he went around the table. He knew the order already of how long it was going to take these different vaccine companies. He went around the table, and it's like, okay, Moderna, you're the fastest. We're going to go with you. You got this mRNA. You're going to turn our bodies into vaccine manufacturing plants, so we'll go with you because you can do it the fastest. They knew. They went in exactly the same, exactly that order. It was all scripted. And as I pointed out many times, you know, this whole thing,
they've got to get the shot.
What was that about? That was about removing your religious exemptions and your medical exemptions for the measles. This is a long time preparing. There were a lot of precedents that were set by Trump even before this thing kicked off. So, you know, when you look at this, you know, one of the other things he said in his speech on Saturday, typical. So leaving Afghanistan was a good thing. I was going to leave. We should have left, however, under the symbols of strength and dignity, not weakness and surrender. We could have left under strength and dignity. It goes on and on about how he should have left and how he could have left and how if he would have left, he would have done it with strength and dignity. Are you kidding me? You didn't do it. You didn't do it. You didn't keep your campaign promise, so don't complain about what happened afterwards when you weren't there. Anyway, I'm not supporting anything that Biden did. I'm not excusing anything he did. I'm saying that Trump said, I should have left. We could have done it. If I would have done it, we would have done it with strength and dignity, but I didn't do it. All right? So, you know, he continues to brag about this. And again, I would say to all these people, does he not know? Does he not know? Does he not know about the mass human experimentation? Does he not know at this point about the untold death and suffering that this has resulted in? Does he not know about any of this? Does he not want to see it stop? Is this guy that is going to be our savior, this guy that's going to be the leader of the Republican Party, is he still so clueless and tone deaf and self-absorbed that he doesn't know that we've had 16,310 people dead, reported dead in the VAERS database, 778,000, three quarters of a million people injured, following the COVID-19 shots, that is 2.5 times more deaths than all of the vaccines for the past 30 years combined. And we're only talking about 10 months. 9 months, actually. Does he not know that? Or does he not care? Because he's such an egomaniac, just like Fauci, with the Trump pictures of himself. Yeah, it's not just Fauci. It's got posters of himself. Not at all. His big contribution in all of this was to skip the testing. Maybe the testing should not have been stopped. And maybe as we see this mass human experimentation and testing that's been going on that he is still cheerleading, maybe we ought to stop it at this point. 16,000 people dead, 750,000 people injured. That's just the United States alone. That's not counting the EU and the UK as well. We've had Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland saying, well, you know, Sweden says, and Finland, we're not going to give it to anybody under the age of 30 because of the heart issues. In Denmark, nobody under the age of 18. In Iceland, they've stopped it altogether. Moderna. And when we talk about this and there's a pushback on it, they say, well, you know, a lot of people will recover with this. It's not a big deal. No, as Lee Merritt pointed out when I interviewed her, heart damage is heart damage. And it's absolutely reprehensible when you're going to create heart damage, young people, young athletes, children. How do you justify something like that? It is unjustifiable. When I talked to Dr. Joel Hirschhorn, MD, last week, he was saying, I've seen a couple of studies that pegged this number not at 16,000, but at over 150,000. We have, and the HHS said this in the past, they said, well, we think that only about 1% of the injuries are reported to the VAERS events. And so what Dr. Joel Hirschhorn was saying was that, no, it's probably about 10% are being reported with this. I mean, that's more than they ever got before. That'd be 10 times more, but guess what? It's still only 1/10 of what they're talking about. 150,000 people dead with this stuff. Let me give you some other data here from the VAERS database. Let's just compare blood clots. Let's compare the Trump shots and the blood clots from the Trump shots. Let's compare that for the last 9 months to 30 years combined. Well, over the last 9 months, we've had 12,553 cases of blood clots from the Trump shots. From all the other vaccines combined for 30 years, 487. That means that 26 times the number of cases, and this is over a 9-month period instead of 30 years, all the other vaccines. For deaths, 589 versus 18, 33 times the number of all other deaths combined from blood clots, just from blood clots. So these are deaths from blood clots. 33 times in 9 months, all the other 30 years combined for all the other vaccines combined. Life-threatening events, 2,543 versus 110, that's 23 times. For permanent disabilities, 869 versus 65. That's 13 times the number of permanent disabilities from blood clots, from the Trump shots, than all the other vaccines combined for all 30 years. And this guy's the guy who's going to save us? This is the guy that 20,000 people show up in Iowa so that he can kick off his next presidential campaign? It's time to move on, folks. Quite frankly, it's time to move on from national politics, but especially from Trump. It's time. It's time to wake up and see this guy for who he is. And then this story here. I've talked about, you want to talk about the ethics of all of this? When you talk about your religious exemption, this is not just about the fetal cell lines that were created in 1963. And oh, by the way, the person who gave me that information about the radio host, he named somebody, I forget the guy's name, out of Atlanta. He corrected that and he said it wasn't that guy. It was Eric Erickson of Red State who was giving that disinformation, saying that a vast majority of over-the-counter medicines and other things were created using fetal cell testing. And, of course, that was debunked. Virtually every drug that was named in that was in use or patented before 1963, many of them for a century before 1963. It was sloppy propaganda. And weeks after it was put out there by the mainstream media, weeks after it was immediately debunked, Eric Erickson is still putting that out there. And again, you know, when I first saw that, I reported it as the propaganda was put out there. And I said, well, if that's the case, thanks for letting me know. I'm not going to take any of those medications anymore. But that, you know, it put things in there like aspirin, which had been around since the 1800s. So it was Eric Erickson who did that. But this came out. UNC researchers, this is from, let's see, the website is, it is Colraffi. Well, it's a very long website. I'll put the tweet up there because I saw this on Twitter. So if you want to find the article, I'll link it instead of trying to give it to you. It's a very strange website. But this is from this website. UNC researchers made a, quote, BLT sandwich out of aborted baby organs in 2019, humanized mice study. If you want to talk about the ethics of this, the ethics are not really, to me, even about this fetal cell line that's there, that's used in this stuff. It's about the general ethics. Yeah, the fetal cell lines were used in the manufacturing of the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson. They were used in the research and development of Pfizer and Moderna. But when you look at what they're doing with humanized mice, you look at what they're continuing to do with abortion, you look at the role that was played by the NIH and the FDA and the U.S. government and the university researchers at the University of Pittsburgh and at UNC Chapel Hill. UNC Chapel Hill, remember that? Yeah. These are the guys, Robert Barrick, involved with the EcoHealth people and with Fauci in terms of doing the coronavirus bat research and so forth and in China and everything. Ralph Barrick and his team of researchers, they're at UNC Chapel Hill, and that's just right down the street from where we used to live. I never knew this kind of stuff was happening right down the street. They buried a gruesome insider joke in the 2019 scientific paper. I missed it the first few times I read the study, but a few days ago, the word sandwich suddenly popped out at me in the section entitled Generation of Humanized Mice. And it says, for at least 12 months post-implantation, BLT mice were constructed by implanting a sandwich of human fetal thymus liver thymus tissue. They got this from Advanced Bioscience Resources. These are the people who are infamous for supplying baby parts, organ trafficking of baby parts for Planned Parenthood, exposed, by the way, by the Center for Medical Progress. I mean, they're trying to take every bit of financial thing away from David Dalyden, put them in jail and all this other kind of stuff. Nobody in the Trump administration defended them, defended their civil liberties, defended the free press, defended investigations of this. Nobody in the Trump administration investigated what was being done by the NIH and the FDA. Instead, they played footsie with them like they did the pharmaceutical industry. But listen to this. They said two pieces of autologous human lung tissue were implanted subcutaneously into the right and left back. Following the tissue implantation, animals received a bone marrow transplant of autologous liver-derived human stem cells. In plain language, writes this author, the BLT is bone marrow liver thymus lung. Mice test models, humanized mice, made by implanting a sandwich of human fetal thymus liver thymus and a human fetal-derived bone marrow transplant into the mouse, and that's what they're calling a BLT sandwich, a sandwich of human fetal thymus liver thymus tissue. So Advanced Bioscience Resources, everyone in the fetal industry knows, a premier aborted baby organ trafficking in partnership with Planned Parenthood. Having seen many tweets like the ones below while searching for information on BLT mice, I was primed to understand the illusion. And these are some of the things. All this talk about BLT mice is making me hungry. Talking about BLT mice will make me hungry. So the first one was from 2012, next one's 2014, another one from later in 2014. Cruel, cruel fate to have to sit through the discussion of a paper that uses BLT mice and has an axis labeled Y, yum, while I'm very hungry. Of all the depraved and disgusting things I've come across in my search for information in the fetal industry's connection to the COVID-19 pandemic, this is the most revolting. It makes me wonder what kind of people these are. What kind of a place the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill really is. Oh, I can tell you. I was surprised that they were doing some of this research, but I'm not surprised at their ethics at all. For more information on Ralph Barrick's lung-only mice, so he developed some mice that were lungs-only. Humanized? I don't know. So when we look at this, these are the issues, and it just really bothers me that a pastor who understands the threat to our liberty, the pastor who understands that how bad this is, and who will even write somebody a religious exemption from this, that he would be so clueless as to still try to invent every kind of prevarication to make an excuse for Donald Trump. There is no excuse for this. There is no excuse for us not understanding what is happening with this. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.